A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 45. Mondokar. The halls of Clan Ren were still empty and quiet as Din ventured his way back through them, retracing his steps towards the lake. He made himself walk slowly, unwilling to catch up with the armorer. It was hard not to sprint through the Morut, to rush to rejoin Boba and Grogu, but Din made himself measure every step that he took, matching his breath to his pace to keep calm. It wasn't that Din was afraid of catching up to the armorer. He was afraid to face her a little, in a distant and detached part of his heart. But the rest of Din's fear was gone, hammered away. In its place was certainty. Din knew what he wanted, and the conviction of it was strong and bright and gleaming. Beskar. I can still be Mandalorian. I can decide, not the armorer, not the creed. Din could be whoever, whatever he wanted to be. All he had to do was choose. After months without, having a sense of conviction again was so welcome a relief it was almost worth the stuck shrapnel feelings of grief and anger and guilt Din had been carrying around for so long. The conviction was something that Din could hold on to, solid and steady. And if it came at the cost of having to fight the armorer, well... Din told himself, we're Mandalorian. Fighting for what we believe in, that's good. That's what I'm supposed to do. And I don't need to fight her today. Din dragged his thoughts along with some effort. His anger was still burning hot and bright, but underneath that, Din knew that he didn't really want to fight the armorer at all. He didn't want to hurt her. But I will if I have to. If the armorer followed through on Din's challenge and demanded that Din defend himself, defend his newfound conviction, Din would have to fight. If I don't, I'll prove her right anyway, he thought. If Din refused to fight, the armorer would name him a coward, Hutunish, too weak to defend himself and what he believed in. She'll use that as proof that the creed is right, that she's right, and that I'm wrong. Din was not wrong. I'm not, he thought fiercely. He had meant every word that he'd said to the Alor, and he believed every word, too. She had no right to tell Din, to tell anyone at the gathering, whether or not they were Mandalorian. She had no right to decide that her way was the only way, no matter what she had survived. If Din wanted to be a Mandalorian, she couldn't tell him that Din couldn't be. Only Din could decide that for himself. And I did decide, he thought. And I'll keep deciding every day if I have to. I am Mandalorian. I broke the creed, but I don't think that I ever stopped being Mandalorian. Not even when I thought that I couldn't be, that there was no way to be Mandalorian again. The darksaber knocked lightly against Din's side. Din didn't draw it again. He didn't have to. He was alone as he made his way back through the silent halls of Clan Ren's Morut. No one sprang out of doorways or shadowy corners to challenge him. Even the sound of the armorer's footsteps had faded. Din would have expected the stronghold to fill up now that Kreese had called her summit to a stop for the day. He would have thought that some of the clans would have jumped at the chance to get away from the others. But the hallways were still empty. There was no one to posture for, no one to intimidate. Not even Ulric Ren was around. He must have gone down to the lake to join the rest of his clan. So Din didn't grab the darksaber, and he took his time moving through the Morut. He didn't want to risk catching up to the armor, And I want to see what a Mandalorian stronghold looks like, Din thought. He wanted to see how other Mandalorians had lived while Din and his tribe had been hiding underground, moving from covert to covert. so he made himself slow down and started to study the walls as he passed them. There was a lot to study. Din didn't know if all clan strongholds were like Clan Ren's, but Clan Ren's, at least, was covered in art. Din had only ever been inside one museum before, the Museum of Barleth while chasing a spice dealer, back when Din had been younger and just starting out in the Bounty Hunters Guild, but the walls of the stronghold reminded him powerfully of that museum. There was a hushed, reverent air to the place, and everywhere Din looked, there was art. Paintings, sculptures, statues, weavings. Several of the walls Din passed were taken up by enormous floor-to-ceiling murals, the scenes painted directly onto the Duracrete itself. And what wasn't painted hosted shelves by the dozen, each one stacked with small sculptures and other artifacts. All of the colors packed into the murals, much like all of the colors of armor down in the valley, were almost dizzying to look at. Din could probably spend hours, days, just wandering the halls trying to make sense of everything he saw. I have to start somewhere, though, Din thought. He paused to study the nearest mural, determined to reorient himself. The mural Din stopped at was huge. The wall it was painted on was 20 or 30 feet long and almost as high, soaring up towards the angled ceiling. The wall opposite the mural was all umbar and glass, cool and wavy, offering a slightly distorted view of the mountains and the trees glittering in the sun. Din didn't have a view of the lake from here, though, so he turned back to the mural. What is this a painting of? He wondered, peering up at the colorful shapes. The painting wasn't a crisp, clear picture like a holophoto. Instead, the mural was a swirl of color and shapes, almost abstract, rich with symbols. It was almost too overwhelming to look at all at once. Din picked a shape or two to start and focused on those. It's a battle, maybe, Din wondered, peering closer. The shapes he'd chosen to focus on were dark gray, a trio of geometric figures circling each other against a smear of blue. All three of them were about as tall and wide as Din's splayed hand, and he thought they were circling each other in what was supposed to be the sky. The trio of figures had darker gray shapes painted onto their backs, and from those darker shapes trailed swoops and strokes of red and orange paint, like wings of fire. The Way of the Rising Phoenix, Din thought. They're wearing jetpacks. That meant that the circling figures were Mandalorians. And if they were Mandalorians flying against the flat blue sky, then the clusters of triangular shapes beneath them, painted brown and green, were trees. A forest. And if it was a forest, then an angular silver shape half hidden by the trees was a Besclara, an iron wolf, and a slash of brown paint was a stooping treecock, and a curl of blue was a river. Din followed the mural a little farther down the hall, eager to see what else he could puzzle out. The painted forest quickly gave way to a wide plain of yellow and gold, and the plain gave way to a jagged range of mountains. Now that Din knew what to look for, he could see Mandalorians painted all over the mural. They were hiding in the trees with the iron wolves, and they were wading in the river, flying above the mountain peaks and working in the golden grasses. They were fighting and farming and hunting and even building. Another trio of gray shapes was pulling up a round tower at the base of one of the mountains. The detail was incredible. Din took it all in, the flying warriors and the sneaking wolves, the forests and the fields, and had to resist the urge to take his gloves off and run his fingers over the paint. It was all long dried. Din wouldn't feel anything but Duracrete, no matter how lush the colors were, no matter how closely he could imagine the bristles of a pine tree or the soft fur of an iron wolf. The grainy rock of the mountains, the feathery reeds beside the river. It looks like Nora's tapestry, almost, Din thought when he finally reached the far end of the mural. The style of art wasn't the same. Rillish weaving was largely symbolic, and the mural had more detail. More angles, too. Most of the shapes were sharp, painted decisively. But it feels like Nora's tapestry, maybe. Looking at the mural made Din feel the same way that looking at Nora's tapestry had. The sense of community, of a great whole made up of 1,000 individual details, was the same. I'm not on this mural, though, Din thought. None of the painted Mandalorians had any color to them, none had visible signets. It was impossible to tell who they were or who they were supposed to represent. At the end of the painting, Din found a small metal placard bolted to the duracrete. It didn't name an artist, but it did name the mural itself. Kote, 7976 CRC. Kote, Din thought. He knew that word. It meant glory. And 7976 CRC, that's what, 10 years ago? 11? The mural was impressive, but Din didn't see anything depicted in it that was particularly glorious. It just looked like a normal scene, an ordinary day. I'm not an artist, though, Din thought wryly. Maybe there's something here that I'm not seeing. Curiosity sufficiently pricked, Din kept moving through the halls, trying to piece together everything that he could see. The next hallway had a dozen shelves instead of a mural, and the shelves were packed with small sculptures and other artifacts. Vases, big chunks of gemstone, hunting trophies. Din eyed them all with interest. The statues in particular were interesting because they were all smaller than Grogu, but packed with a surprising amount of detail, and followed the halls further into the house. He found more murals. Some of them were as colorful as the first had been. They showed similar sprawling scenes to high mountains and low river valleys, dense forests and open plains. There were Mandalorians in all of the murals, which Din supposed that he should have expected. But there were other beings, too. Din recognized the Iron Wolves and the Shriekhawks, but there were enormous blue serpents, too, their necks crowned with wide frills, and some tall, spindly creatures with branching horns and four eyes each. A few of the murals, though, had almost no color to them at all. One painting of a Mandalorian warrior, much closer in scale than any of the other murals, was cast in shades of gray. Dozens of enemy warriors swirled around the central figure like the winds of a sandstorm. Another, painted in shades of green, showed a city dome that had been cracked open, verdant smoke trailing up into a bruised sky. Din thought that it might have been a painting of one of the city domes of Mandalore. Did one person paint all of these? He wondered as he neared the great hall that faced the lake and the summit. Who? Why? Ursa Wren had said that her husband, Ulrich, was more of an artist than a warrior. He hadn't worn any armor at all when he'd greeted Din at the door. Maybe he was the artist behind all of this. Whoever the artist was, they were talented. The only things Din had ever painted were his old set of armor, which he'd painted red, and some scratches on the Razor Crest. He couldn't imagine the effort it took to paint one mural, let alone the half-dozen he'd passed today, but all of them were painted in the same style. And if Ulrich Wren had painted all of those murals, he must have had a reason. Preserving history, maybe? Din wondered. Mandalore was gone. Maybe painting scenes from its history was how Ulrich Wren had dealt with that grief. An odd expression of grief for a Mandalorian, but Din could understand. Din finally reached the great room again, the wide, empty space that faced the lake and the valley. There were a few other Mandalorians in here now. Ulrich Wren himself was speaking quietly to two others, a male Togruta and a human woman, both in chipped, scuffed armor. Another small group had come in from the lake and retreated to the far end of the room, murmuring with their heads bent close together. Din didn't want to interrupt either group, so he kept his gaze forward and strode past them. The Togruta with Ulrich looked up, but didn't call out or try to stop Din, and the other group ignored Din entirely. Din looked out through the warped glass windows towards the lake and the valley. Most of the Mandalorians who'd come to Kreeza Summit were still gathered there, though the crowds had spread out along the lakeshore. Groups and clusters of warriors formed around creeds and ways that Din didn't understand. He saw the armorer's golden helmet glint in the sun before she, too, disappeared into the crowd. Din's mouth thinned, but he made himself keep walking. No one stopped him as he left Clan Ran's stronghold. The snow crunched underfoot. He scanned the crowd and found Boba without trying. Boba wasn't especially tall, but he had a presence about him that was magnetic almost, like a lodestone tugging on raw iron. Din found him immediately. Kark, Din thought. He's moved. When he and the armorer had gone inside, Boba had been standing on the lakeshore, apart from everyone else. He was still standing a little apart from just about everyone else, but as the crowds had shifted, so had Boba. He'd been pulled across the lake and now stood on the ice, stance spread like a bladeback ready to be rushed. Grogu was a speck of green on his shoulder. Kirk, Din thought again. There were 200 or 300 Mandalorians between Din and Boba, and nearly all of them were looking at Din. Din had waded through the crowd once already today, but when he'd done it before, Kreese had been with him and she hadn't yet named him the Mandalore. Din had just been another warrior trailing after her, and no one had particularly cared who he was. But she's told them all that I'm the Mandalore now, Din thought, and I didn't say that I wasn't. Din had snarled it at the armorer. I am the Mandalore, he told her. But none of the rest of these people had heard him say it. He hadn't agreed with Kreese's charge out loud. But I didn't disagree with her. Kreese had put Din forward as the king of the Mandalorians, and Din hadn't thrown out her claim. I shouldn't be surprised that everyone's looking at me, he thought ruefully. Some of the Mandalorians were only looking at him out of the corners of their visors, but others were looking at him head-on, appraising, calculating like an Anuba sizing up a lone bantha to see if it was sick or injured, if the pack could take it. He felt their attention scrape over his nerves. It set Din's teeth on edge. The thought of pushing through all of that attention, that expectation. It doesn't matter. Boba's on the other side, Din thought. He smiled to himself, half bitter. And Kreese has forbidden dueling until tomorrow. Din took a deep breath. He could do this. He had faced down his own Alor. He had told her that she was wrong and had survived doing it. Wading through a few hundred possibly hostile warriors was nothing compared to that. And if I tell myself that a few more times, Din thought, gathering his courage and stepping off the lakeshore, I might believe it, too. The nearest group of Mandalorians shifted out of Din's way easily enough, letting him pass without any trouble. They watched him curiously, eyes and visors bright, but no one reached out to stop him. It wasn't until Din had gone 20 or 30 yards, passing several clusters of clans and allies, that he ran into a group of Mandalorians that didn't seem at all interested in getting out of Din's way. Din slowed his pace, watching them warily. They weren't children of the Watch. Kirade, Kreese had called them. There were 10 or 12 Mandalorians in this group, but only half of them had helmets on. The rest had their helmets tucked underneath their arms or resting by their feet, and a few of them didn't even have a full set of Beskar Gam. The clan, as far as Din could tell, was mostly human. The nearest Mandalorian, a tall, thin man with short brown hair and blue eyes, wearing piecemeal black and white armor, had a familiar shape stamped into one pauldron as a signet. It was supposed to be a cat of some kind, Din thought. A Zalorian rockline, maybe, or a vine tiger. Din had seen the signet before. He shifted through his memories. Clan Eldar, Din remembered. Kreese had 2 Eldars in her contingent, Terran and Tabris. They were her allies. They wore Night Owl colors. But some clans are much bigger than mine, Din reminded himself. And the larger clans, I know that not all of their members chose the same sides in the war. Some clans had fractured down the middle. And these Eldars, if they were Eldars, hadn't stood with Kreese as she'd opened the summit. Many Eldars had, but not this particular band. They weren't standing with her now, either. Din didn't know where she'd disappeared to, but she wasn't here. The thin man narrowed his eyes at Din. Din tensed, shoulders bunching, but didn't stop moving. If the Eldars wanted Din to stop, they'd have to make the first move. If they're brave enough, Din thought. People all over the galaxy, Fennec, Geeta, Boba, even Koska Reeves, had been telling Din that with his armor and his spear and his darksaber, he cut an intimidating figure. That Din looked like something out of a desert tale. Maybe I can use that now, he thought, straightening his back. Maybe I can convince some of these people to leave me alone. The tall, thin man proved himself to be brave, though. He opened his mouth, eyes flashing, and took a step in Din's direction. Din's hand twitched towards the hilt of the darksaber. The man saw Din reaching for the blade and bared his teeth. For a tense, electric moment, Din thought that the other Mandalorian would lunge for him. Din shifted his own weight to his back foot, preparing to roll with the tackle, and closed his fingers over the hilt of the darksaber. But he didn't have to draw it. "Lauren Eldar," said Fenrau, shouldering his way through the crowd behind Din. "I haven't seen you in an age. I thought you died on Findar." Rao slid neatly into a place at Din's side like he'd always been there. Din blinked, startled, but Rao was looking at the Eldar. Another Mandalorian came trailing in behind Rao and took up a position at Din's back. Lauren Eldar still stood with 10 or 12 of his own clan, but the idea of facing off against 3 Mandalorians instead of just Din sapped some of his bravery. He stopped baring his teeth quite so obviously and stepped back towards the safety of his clan. "Rao," Eldar growled. He had a low, hoarse voice. "I thought you died for your rebellion." "Never quite managed it, I'm afraid," Rao said cheerfully. "By the end of it, all of the half-decent pilots had defected from the Empire over to our side, and none of the idiots ever figured out how a targeting computer worked." Eldar snorted, lips curling in disgust. "Not a rebel sympathizer, then," Din thought. His heart sank. "I barely understand where everyone stood on different sides of the Mandalorian Civil Wars," he thought, "let alone where they stood in the war against the Empire."
"Is there something you wanted, Eldar?"
Rao continued, his tone still light. The Mandalorian behind Din, who was still fully armored, said nothing. Din eyed Rao, confused and wary. Rao had supported Din during the summit. He had disagreed with Kryze. He'd even thrown his name behind Din's to get Bo-Katan to let Boba come down to join them. But he did all of that for a reason, Din thought. He wants something, too. I just don't know what that is. Still, there were several other clans between Din and Boba, and without Rao, Din would have to get through them alone. If Rao's presence kept fights from erupting or more challenges from being issued so that Din didn't have to fight all of Mandalore in the morning, Din would tolerate it. He stood up for Boba, Din reminded himself. He said that Boba belonged here, too. That's something I can agree with. I can work with that.
"Then if you'll excuse us," said Rao mildly.
"Enjoy the feast." Eldar grimaced, but jerked his chin to the rest of his clan, and all of them got out of Din's way. A few of them tossed dirty looks over their shoulders, but a dirty look wasn't a lunge for a blaster or even a demand to duel, so Din decided that he didn't particularly care what Clan Eldar thought of him and put them out of his mind. Din looked over his new companion instead. Up close, Fenrau was older than Din had first thought. Still of an age with Kryze, but Rao was more weathered. He had deep lines gathered around the corners of his eyes that gave him a weary look, and while Din could tell that Rao's hair had once been pale red, most of it had weakened to a rusty gray. One of his ears was nicked like a wild lothcat scarred by some fight, and Rao's armor was dented and scratched in several places. He definitely survived a war or two, Din thought. Rao noticed Din's inspection and smiled. The expression lightened the weary look around his eyes.
"I don't think we've been formally introduced," Rao said, gesturing for Din to keep walking.
The path to Boba wasn't cleared, not yet, but some of the other clans nearby had watched Rao handle the Eldars and were preemptively shifting to let Din pass.
"I'm Fen Rao," Rao continued. "I'd give you my clan and house, but I'm just about the only one left in either."
Din dipped his head. He was struck by the urge to look Rao in the eye, so he tugged off his helmet and did. The wind was cold on his face, through his hair, but Rao flashed Din a look of pleased surprise.
"So he knows that I'm a child of the Watch, then," Din thought.
"I'm Din," Din said. "I don't really have a clan or a house. Clan Jaren, I guess."
"Your people don't really keep to those ways, do you?" said Rao.
He didn't say it with any accusation or even any disdain. Whenever Kryze had talked about Din's people, she'd barely been able to hide her dislike, but Rao only sounded curious. "No," Din said, deciding to take Rao's curiosity as genuine. He didn't want to drive away an ally if he didn't have to.
"Fascinating," Rao murmured.
He padded alongside Din, trailed by the third Mandalorian. When Kreese had stood up in the center of the lake and addressed the whole gathering, Rao had had a small group with him, but the others were nowhere in sight. The only one still with Rao was a stocky humanoid with no leku or montrals or horns that Din could see. He wore heavy plate, and his armor was a startling shade of orange, flecked here and there with white paint, and he had a white Karta Beskar symbol painted in the center of his helmet, which was fixed firmly over his head. The stranger had two signets, too, both painted in white. On one pauldron, he had the same winged, snarling, skull-like face that Rao had, though Rao's was painted in red. And on the other pauldron, he had a Nexu with a wide, toothy mouth, the animal rearing up onto its hind paws to slash at the air, its tail curling around the Mandalorian's bicep. The stranger caught Din looking at his signets and inclined his head. Rao noticed.
"Ah," he said, "forgive me, I am out of practice. Din Djarin, Kippin Awad of Clan Awad, House..."
"I'm tempted to say House Kreese to teach you a lesson," the other Mandalorian drawled. He sounded younger than Rao. "But you know what they say about old strills." To Din, he added, "House Nesade for now. We'll see what happens tomorrow, yeah?" "And it's just Kip," the Mandalorian added, sticking his forearm out across Rao's chest for Din to grasp. Din blinked, nonplussed, but took Kip's arm.
"Sukhugar," Din said.
Kip had a warrior's grip and a warrior's steadiness, too. He and Rao were well matched.
"Sukhoi," Kip replied, and he sounded like he was grinning. "It's good to meet you properly. Do you know that it's almost impossible to learn anything about you?"
That caught Din off guard. "What?" Din pulled his hand back, wariness returning. He darted a look between Rao and Kip.
"Rao helped me," Din thought. "He's not a puppet of Bo-Katan's, but he has his own agenda."
Just because Rao had defended Boba didn't mean that he was Din's ally, and Din remembered that now. Rao only sighed.
"Tactful, Kip," he said.
Kip just shrugged.
"It's true," he said.
He was still looking at Din.
"And you're a child of the Watch, aren't you? Your people are straightforward, or so I hear, anyway."
"Kip," said Rao again.
"What?"
He was definitely grinning now, the sound of it bright in his voice. And Din couldn't help but soften a little, his confusion and wariness still present but fading.
"I don't think he means any harm," Din thought. "And he is confusing, but I'm used to being confused, especially when other Mandalorians are involved."
Other Mandalorians still didn't make much sense to Din, though he was learning more about them by the minute.
"I'm gonna have to learn fast," he thought wryly.
The Ilor wasn't going to take Din back. He had no place among the coverts anymore. He was going to have to get used to the way that other Mandalorians did things. The way they talked and the way they interacted with each other, if Din intended to.
To what, he thought?
Be the Mandalore? Despite what Din had said to the Armorer, he knew that he wasn't really the Mandalore. He couldn't be. He didn't want to be.
"I have enough to do just trying to keep Boba and my kid alive," Din thought. "Trying to keep Gorga out of our business on Tatooine. To try and keep an entire people alive to lead them against the Empire. No."
Din didn't want to do that, but... I don't want to be cut off from them, he thought. The covert Alore had kept their tribes away from other Mandalorians, had done their best to convince the tribes that there were no other Mandalorians at all. "But there are, and I want to get to know them," Din thought. He wanted to get to know Fen Rao and Ulrich Wren, to meet the rest of Torg Saxon's brothers, to sit around another tribe's cookfire, to hear their stories, to learn from their elders. Din eyed Fen Rao and Kippin Awad again. "I want to get to know them," Din thought, "even if they're strange." Rao sighed again.
"Ignore him," he suggested, addressing Din. "If I hadn't met his parents myself, I would tell you that Kip was nursed by a Nexu and learned how to bite before he learned any proper manners."
"Ouch," said Kip, flexing his arm. The movement made the Nexu signet painted across his pauldron and his upper arm shift.
"It's fine," Din said slowly. "It's just surprising, that's all. You were trying to learn about me."
Din thought about all of the bounty hunters he'd outrun or outfought after taking the kid from Navarro City,
about the puck with Din's face on it that he'd found on the weak way beneath Gela's place, and narrowed his eyes. "Why?" Din asked, suspicious again. "You're not with the Bounty Hunters Guild, are you?" Kip laughed. "No," he said. "I'm not with any guild." Then he sobered. "And of course I was. I try to keep an eye on what Lady Bo-Katan is doing these days. She exiled herself to the far reaches of the Outer Rim years ago, did you know? Then one day she started showing back up in clan space, flying around in that Imperial light cruiser of hers, rallying a bunch of the great clans to her cause. I wanted to know what happened, why she'd come back. That's when I heard about you." "I helped her take the light cruiser," Din said, still cautious. Despite his prickling irritation with Kreese, she had gotten Din into this mess. He was reluctant to betray her to a potential enemy. Kreese hadn't named Din her enemy yet, after all, which meant that for now they were allies. "I didn't know she was exiled." Kip waved a careless hand. "She wasn't, really," he explained. "She exiled herself. It's not like anyone drove her away. A lot of the Mondo Adai did the same, really, after the Rebs brought down the Empire. Wasn't much left for us to do, you see, and for a lot of us..." Kip shrugged. "For a lot of us," Rao finished, just as somber. "There wasn't much left." "You didn't serve in the rebellion?" Din asked Kip, surprised. He'd assumed that Kip was one of Rao's people, the protectors, Kreese had called them, and Rao had fought in the rebellion. "Me? No," Kip shook his head. "Didn't see much point in it, to be honest." "But you're..." Din looked between Kip and Rao again. "You're one of the protectors, aren't you?" Rao smiled, but this time the expression was distant, pained. "He's new," Rao said. "Oh." Din didn't know what to say to that. Kip, fortunately, seemed to be able to navigate his way through a conversation like a Tusken could navigate the sands of the Dune Sea, and took charge again. "Regardless," Kip said, circling back to his first point. "You showed up with Kreese, but nobody else really knew anything about you. I got your name eventually, but Kreese kept you close under the desk, didn't she?"
"I wouldn't know," Din replied, uncomfortable. "I didn't stay with her on the light cruiser after we took it from Gideon," he said. "I've been on Tatooine."
Kip nodded. "Figure that out eventually," he said. "There's not many among the Mondo Adai who go around in full armor all the time, and you've got the only Mudhorn signet recorded in the rolls. You're down in the Fighting Corps' rolls, too, but those are 30 years old. I'm not a half-bad slicer, but I couldn't find you anywhere else. Not even in the Roost records. Where'd you people keep you, under a rock?"
Din thought of some of the places that the covert had lived in and snorted.
"Sometimes," he said. He blinked again and tried to sort through everything Kip was saying. The kid spoke fast.
"I don't know what the Roost records are," Din thought. He'd known that his name was down in the Fighting Corps rosters. That was where Gideon had found his name the first time. But Gideon hadn't mentioned the Roost records.
Where did Kip come from? Din wondered. Clan Awad was an old clan, Din knew that much. Boba had told him that Clan Awad had fought in the Purges and had been decimated.
Is he from Mandalore? From the Sector? How did he escape whatever happened to the rest of the Awads?
"Sometimes," Kip repeated, still sounding amused. "Well, it is good to meet you, finally. Boss here thinks so, too." Din, assuming that Boss was Fen Rao, tilted his head in Rao's direction. Rao sighed again, sounding put upon.
"It is good," he allowed.
The three of them were almost to Boba now. There were only a few other groups still in the way, and all of the warriors who saw Din coming, flanked by Rao, were quick to stand aside.
"You've caused quite a stir," Rao continued.
He sounded amused, too, almost, which Din wasn't sure that he understood.
"You weren't what any of us were expecting when Lady Bo-Katan called us together."
Din narrowed his eyes again. He smelled blood in the water.
"What were you expecting?"
Rao chuckled. "Honestly," he said, "I was expecting Lady Bo-Katan to try and rally us for one last stand against the Empire. I expected her to make the claim to lead us. One final charge, a Kote Khan."
"A glorious battle," Din thought. He nodded.
That was what Din had been expecting, too, what he'd thought that Kreese's quest was.
vengeance and justice for all of Mandalore. But that's not what she did.
I've known Lady Bo-Katan for many years, Rao continued. I thought she'd lost the ability to surprise me about the time that Mandalore fell.
He smiled at Din.
But apparently she hadn't.
Din scowled. He wished that Rao would come out and say what it was that he wanted.
What does that mean?
Rao's smile only widened. Din was half-tempted to reach for the Darksaber again to threaten answers out of the man. It wouldn't help anything, probably, but Din was starting to get tired of others talking around him, talking over him. Rao must have recognized some of Din's impatience because he relented.
It means, he said, that you, whoever you are, wherever you've come from, have managed to do what 3 wars, 40 years, and the loss of our homeworld, our entire system, did not. You've managed to make Lady Bo-Katan change her mind.
Or, added Rao after thinking for a moment,
that you've gotten her to consider changing her mind. I imagine that she'll keep her own counsel on the matter until official alliances form tomorrow after the duels, but...
I don't know what you're talking about, Din interrupted. He knew that he was probably being too blunt, but he didn't care. He was thin on patience. He was grateful to Rao for speaking up on Boba's behalf, but the way that Rao was talking about Din himself...
I don't know, Rao, Din reminded himself. He curled his hands into nervous fists.
And he doesn't know me. I don't... Just because he stood up for Boba doesn't mean that he's my ally, that I can trust him. But Rao was a Mandalorian. Din wanted to trust him.
I didn't do anything to Lady Bo-Katan, Din added. I didn't ask her to change her mind. I don't even know what she wants.
Din had thought that he'd known, but then Kreese had named Din the Mandalore, not herself. He'd assumed that she'd been using Din to lay a trap for someone else, using him as bait. After all, if Kreese had claimed to be the Mandalore, she'd be the one facing at least 2 challenges tomorrow, not Din. For all Din knew, Kreese was going to let half the Mandoade at Din tomorrow. Din was a skilled fighter. He knew that he was a skilled fighter. But if the challenges kept coming...
Said Rao, his expression thoughtful. He and Kip exchanged a speaking glance.
I don't know what that means either, Din muttered, prickly and defensive again. He reached for the certainty he'd found facing the Allure and tried to armor himself with it against Rao, but it only half worked. Din knew what he wanted, but that didn't help him untangle what Rao wanted, what Kreese wanted.
I have the Darksaber, Din said, trying to sort it all out.
I won it, I guess, but that doesn't make me the Mandalore.
He said it quietly so that none of the other nearby clans could overhear, but it was important to say it.
Kreese knows that I'm not. That's not how my people do things.
A sword, even a sword like the Darksaber, strange as it was, didn't make one warrior more fit to lead than another. Only skill did that. Only wisdom and cunning and the support of the rest of the tribe. Strength and skill mattered, of course, but strength and skill weren't the only qualities a good leader needed.
We all know that you're not, said Rao gently. He offered Din half a smile when Din turned to look at him, surprised.
Not even the most traditional among us blindly follow that sword, Din Djarin, he said. All that the Darksaber gives you, as far as most of the Mandoade are concerned, is a claim to rule. You may not be the Mandalore yet, but you have the potential to be.
A pretty good claim, though, Kip cut in. Rao shot him an exasperated look, but Kip didn't seem to notice. Kreese wouldn't put you forward if your claim was a weak one. She'd probably just space you when no one was looking. Say you met with an accident on Tatooine. But you did win that in a fight, right?
Reluctantly, Din nodded.
Kreese's story was true?
Again, Din nodded.
Kip blew out a whistling breath.
Yeah, he said. Winning that old sword while trying to defend your kid from the evils of the Empire, that's a pretty carking good claim. You could be the Mandalore, if you wanted. As long as you don't get your Sheb's kicked too badly tomorrow, I guess, though I wouldn't worry about Aken Anson. If he knows which end of a blaster shoots, ne paravu nitsatare.
Din drew back, shoulders bunching. He expected Rao to interject, to deny it. Din couldn't be the Mandalore, of course he couldn't be. Rao was Mandalorian, he was old enough to have fought in the Civil War. He had fought against the Empire. He had been fighting for Mandalore while Din and his people had been hiding in a sewer. But Rao said nothing. Rao was watching Din with interest, but he wasn't contradicting Kip. And he was watching Din's face, not the Darksaber. Din didn't know what to do with that. I'm not like you, Din said. He swallowed. I'm not from Mandalore. You said it yourself, I don't have a clan, a history. I was a foundling. There was enough time to get my name down in the Fighting Corps, but after that... I don't come from one of the great clans. There is no Clan Jaren, not outside of me.
Ah, said Rao, his expression clearing. He smiled wry again and gestured at the crowd.
They were near Boba now. Din could see the familiar slope of Boba's shoulders, the proud lift of Boba's chin.
As you can see, said Rao, there's not exactly a Clan Rao here either.
There are some who'd prefer to believe that the right to rule Mandalore comes from the blood, he said. His lips twitched. Lady Bo-Katan among them, perhaps. Her father ruled Kalevala, after all, and her sister held Mandalore as best she could.
But you might be surprised, Zhatnevod, Rao continued. Many Mandalore have come from the great clans, that's true. Kip here even has one or two among his ancestors.
Very distantly, Kip muttered. Rao ignored him. But many more have come from no clan and still led Mandalore.
Rao's eyes were dancing.
Jaster Muriel came from no clan.
Din gritted his teeth. Is Rao testing me, he wondered? Is he trying to see what I know about Mandalore and what I don't?
Jaster Muriel died, Din pointed out.
Rao inclined his head.
He did, he allowed. But we all will die, and a death at a traitor's hands does not mean that Muriel was not a good leader.
It's not exactly encouraging, though, Din shot back.
Kip snorted.
Maybe not, said Rao. But you do have a claim if you want it.
You should think about it, at least.
Din narrowed his eyes. What do you get out of it? Din asked flatly. If I win whatever challenges come tomorrow and decide that I can be Mandalore, what's in it for you? I don't know you.
A fair argument, said Rao. Din faltered again, bewildered. He didn't understand why Rao kept doing this, why Rao didn't behave like Kryze, what he hoped to get out of all of this.
Can I think about it, or would you prefer an answer now? Rao continued.
Said Din, thrown.
Rao softened. I think I know what it is that I want, he said. But it never hurts to take a moment to be sure before a warrior puts their life and their honor on the front lines, yes?
Yes, said Din slowly. He didn't see why he needed Rao's answer now. There wouldn't be any duels until the morning, and Din didn't need to add another duel to his schedule. If Rao wanted some time to think about what it was that he wanted from Din, what he hoped to gain by either backing or refusing Din's claim to Mandalore.
Very good, said Rao, approving. Then we'll leave you here with your people, Din Djarin.
They had reached the edges of the crowd. Boba was only a handful of meters away, though his back was currently to Din. Rao turned to Kip and said,
Come on, then. I think that's Bardon Jusik over with Vera Baroya, and I could have sworn that he died on that mass over on Ansari.
And then Rao was gone, Kip trailing after him, and Din was alone at the edge of the crowd. That was strange, Din thought. He wasn't sure what had just happened or what it meant. It's not the only strange thing that's going to happen to me today, he thought. He set Rao aside and turned his attention to Boba. Or even the only strange thing that's going to happen in the next hour. Boba was not standing at the edges of the crowd by himself. He had Grogu with him, of course. Din hadn't really worried about leaving the kid with Boba, because he'd known that Boba would tear the entire planet in half rather than let anything happen to Din's son. But there were other Mandalorians with Boba, too. Din counted 5, alarm crashing through him reflexively before he recognized one. 4 of the Mandalorians with Boba were in all black, the only color to them a mismatched plate here and there, white stripes painted onto one pauldron, a red paw on another, green paint lining a Carta Beskar. It's Strill, Din thought, crossing the ice. Strill was the only Mandalorian he recognized. She was speaking to Boba, her hands moving excitedly. And if it's Strill, then the others, they're her tribe, Din realized. The other three in black armor were clustered defensively against Strill's back. One was very tall and very thin, and the others were around Strill's height. The only Mandalorian of her tribe who wasn't in black armor was a humanoid in hunter plate, which had been painted a rich royal blue, like night owl colors without white or black or gray accents. What do they want? He wondered. Din's own covert, apparently, had had a dim view of Boba. Paz had, at least, because of what Paz had learned from his father. If Strill's covert had heard the same stories that Paz had, if any of them were remnants of the old Death Watch who had fought against Jango Fett, had hated him, then they weren't likely to care much for Boba either. But Strill did, Din supposed. She still called him Darvod. She was grateful to Boba for the protection he'd given her. Warily, Din made his way to Boba's side. Strill, Din said, when he got close enough to the group to be heard without shouting at them. Din was done shouting for the day. He made it to Boba's side and was immediately relieved to be near him, relieved when Boba shifted so that his elbow knocked against Din's, and inclined his head nervously to the Mandalorians behind Strill. All four of them looked back, impassive. Din's helmet was still in his hands. Boba's face was bare, too, but Strill and her people would have expected that. To see Din's bare face, though. If these Mandalorians were Strill's tribe, and they all looked like her tribe, then they were children of the Watch, Din's cousins. My enemies now, Din thought, if their law sides with mine, anyway. Din's stomach twisted at the thought of having to face Strill in a duel. He didn't think she'd challenge him directly, but if her lord ordered her to... Stop. Din pushed the thought down. He couldn't worry about that, not right now. He wished that he'd stopped to pull his helmet back on. Strill, at least, didn't seem all that bothered by the sight of Din's bare face. She nodded back at Din, friendly and warm, then turned to one of the black-armored warriors at her side and gestured at Boba. You've met Darvod, Strill said, her voice bright beneath her helmet. Din was so surprised by her use of the nickname in front of warriors of her own tribe that he wasn't immediately put on guard by her mischievous tone. Then she gestured at Din, and his heart sank. This is Darvod. Din stared at her for a long moment, too startled to reply. Then he closed his eyes. Boba, the traitor, coughed a smothered laugh into one hand, Grogu swaying on his shoulder. One of the warriors behind Strill, the very tall, very skinny one, groaned. That was terrible, the tall warrior muttered. His voice was disguised by their helmet's vocoder, but he sounded young. I'm Din, Din said, intervening before the nickname could stick. Strill chortled to herself, pleased with her own cleverness. Din Djarin, I'm glad to meet you. A few of the Mandalorians behind Strill shifted, muttering to each other, but the one closest to her inclined her own head. I'm called Tamsin, she said. She was a slight warrior, not much taller than Strill, and her plain black armor was unremarkable. The only color on her entire Beskar Gam, aside from black, was a thin line of green paint around her Carta Beskar. She could have been any warrior from any tribe, any covert. Din recognized her name, though. Strill had said it before. Tamsin was the allure of her covert. Din stood up a little taller, the echoes of his argument with his own allure rattling around in his head. It had been hard to argue with her because Din loved her, because he'd gone to her for advice, because she'd forged his armor, because she'd brushed his hair back from his head when he'd been young and sick. Din didn't think he'd have the same problem arguing with Tamsin if he had to. But Tamsin didn't seem eager to start spilling blood. Strill tells us that you saved her life, Tamsin continued. She had a light, lilting voice, her accent strange, and her tone was hard to read. Her helmet was just as impassive as any Mandalorian's. And the life of her brother. I helped, Din said cautiously, unsure what Strill had already told her lord, what Boba may or may not have confirmed. Din's face was bare. He wouldn't be able to lie to Tamsin. I don't want to lie to Tamsin, he thought. Half of this mess got started because one warrior, or group of warriors, I guess, lied to another. The Alor's words rattled between Din's ears. She had lied to him. She had lied to all of them. To Din and Annika and Paz and the Foundlings. Din wondered if Tamsin had lied to her people, too. Tamsin studied Din intently. He wanted to duck his head to shy away from her attention, but Din was tired of doing that, too. He met Tamsin's gaze and set his jaw. He refused to feel guilt or shame. I was happy to help, Din added, because it was true. Strill had surprised him that day when she'd tossed Theron down the stairs and walked into Boba's throne room to ask for Din's help. But Din had still been happy to help her, relieved that he could help her. We both were, Boba cut in unexpectedly. Din blinked at him. Grogu added, even though he hadn't had anything to do with the trip to Arcanus at all and had probably been terrorizing Master Skywalker and his other teachers on Yavin 4 at the time. One of the warriors behind Strill and Tamsin shifted. Din tensed, preparing to spring to Boba's defense if he had to, but Strill beat him to it. Strill's chuckling turned into an outright laugh. See, she said, turning to Tamsin. I told you that they were modest. Tamsin made a thoughtful noise. Din eyed her. Why does Tamsin, a child of the Watch, care if Boba and I are modest? He wondered. Din knew that he should probably stop trying to predict what other Mandalorians would think or feel or do. Din was only just learning now that his idea of what a Mandalorian would think or feel or do was rather skewed. But Tamsin was like his Alor, she led a covert. And Din knew that Strill and Jaig, at least, followed the creed. They had learned a little Mandoa and were more tolerant of outsiders, or at least of Din and Boba, than Din's tribe had been. But they followed the same creed that Din had followed all his life. Tamsin killed a warrior who'd become Darmanda, Din remembered. Tallow. She lost her helmet in a cantina fight, and Tamsin killed her. Just like my lord might kill me tomorrow, Din thought. Boba knocked his wrist against Din's. Their Beskar chimed. Din made himself take a deep breath and settle. Whatever Tamsin thinks of me, he thought, she can't do anything about it today. He almost smiled. I'm going to be fighting from dawn till dusk, aren't I? Tamsin studied Din for a moment longer and then said, Thank you. Kark, Din thought. I didn't see that coming either. Boba elbowed Din. Din said, scrambling to recover. You're welcome. I had been looking for them. Strill just found us first. I look forward to hearing the tale, Tamsin said dryly. It's not every day that two of our youngest warriors sneak away onto another warrior ship and disappear for a year. Strill winced. Din raised an eyebrow. I told you I'd tell you everything that happened later, Strill grumbled. It's not really that interesting of a story. Jarvot here came at just the right time. Paz would have died without his help, you know. So you've said, Tamsin retorted. Her tone was even, almost devoid of inflection, but somehow Din knew that she was smiling. Which is strange, considering that I'm sure your mother taught you basic field medicine, regardless of how uncooperative one's patient might be. Strill coughed. That's not the point, she said. The point is that without Darvod and Jarvod, Paz would have died, and me and Jaig probably wouldn't have lasted very long against the Empire, so I owe Din Djarin my life. She said it fiercely, too. She used Din's name, which Strill had never done before. Oh, he thought, touched. She's protecting me. Tamsin had killed the last child of the Watch who'd broken the creed. Strill was trying to make sure that Tamsin didn't try to kill Din. A rush of warm affection robbed Din of most of his lingering wariness. Vodika, he couldn't help but think. Little sister. Jaig helped us fend off Gorga's mercs, Din said, tilting his head in Boba's direction. Boba made a rumbling sound of agreement. And you kept Paz and me from killing each other like idiots, so... We're even, Strill. You don't owe me anything.
Jarvod,
Strill hissed. She moved her hands in the familiar shapes of Tusken sign. Din started. Paz had taught her a little, she'd said, but... But Jaig's been folded into the Sun Rock, Din realized. The young scouts will have taught him some more signs, and he must have taught Strill.
Shut,
Strill signed, very slowly, very clumsily.
Up. I help.
Din did smile at her then, affection welling up through his chest. Thank you, he signed back. But to Tamsin, Din said, Strill and Jaig are a credit to your tribe, but I don't need them to protect my honor. He lifted his helmet up a little, though he knew he didn't need to. All of the children of the Watch could see his face. They could see that he wasn't one of them anymore. I have broken the creed, Din said, and Strelika, you can't protect me from it. Only your Allure can decide what she's going to do, right? Strill made an outraged sound, a frightened sound, but Tamsin only inclined her head. You are unusual, aren't you? She said. Din had no idea what Tamsin was referring to. Din had been an ordinary Mandalorian for most of his life. You're brave, at least. My niece is trying to protect you. And I am honored by her friendship, Din replied. But I don't need or want her to get between you and me. Tamsin tilted her head, considering. Unusual, she repeated. Then she shrugged. You're not my responsibility, she said. And even if you were, you sheltered two of my clan. I have honor, too. You have nothing to worry about from me, Din Djarin. I'll leave you for your own tribe to deal with. Din and Strill both relaxed. Boba didn't. He was stiff as a mountain beside Din, one hand up to keep Grogu from toppling over, the other drifting for the handle of his Gaderfi. But he had nothing to worry about now, really. Tamsin would stay out of it. She clearly thought that Din was Darmanda still, but she was willing to let him go here and now and let his own Allure decide what to do with him. And that will be settled tomorrow, Din thought. He shifted a little, trying to convey to Boba that it was all right. Tamsin wasn't threatening Din, she was reassuring him. Now that that's settled, Strill said brightly, you've met Bavo Tamsin, but not everyone else. These are my cousins Angus and Brina. Din wasn't sure which was which, but the warrior in royal blue hunter's plate and the warrior in black armor with a red paw print stamped into one shoulder both inclined their heads. And this is my other brother, Rol, Strill added, gesturing at the tall, skinny kid behind her. The kid, Rol, waved a little. Her youngest brother, Din remembered. He craned his head back to look up at Rol and whistled. What happened to you, then? He asked Strill. This one's even taller than Jaig. Rol puffed his chest out, pleased that someone had noticed, but Strill only made a disgusted sound. The warrior in blue armor snorted. I don't want to talk about it, Strill grumbled, and I take back what I said. You're terrible, actually. Din grinned. I think it's too late for that, Strelika, he said. She made another disgusted sound, but Din didn't particularly care. She wasn't the only one who could hand out terrible nicknames. Well, now that we all know each other, Strill said, tone sour. She lifted her chin at Boba. I can keep an eye on Arshatika if you still want to talk to Jarfog. Din turned to Boba, too, lifting an eyebrow. He wasn't surprised, not really. He'd expected Boba to want to talk. He didn't especially like the idea of leaving Grogu without Din or Boba to protect him, but... Boba shifted. Just for a few minutes, he said quietly. His expression was smooth and neutral. There were too many eyes on Boba. But he sounded hesitant, almost unsure. Din blinked. If you don't mind, Boba added. The kid can be there, but... But it's going to be hard to talk about what happened on Tatooine with a magical toddler in the room, Din thought wryly, translating Boba's odd hesitancy. And it's good that Boba wants to talk, that he thinks it's worth it to talk. Din and Boba had parted badly. That argument seemed very far away now, since Boba had come to stand at Din's side and had offered to face just about all of Mandalore with him. But they had argued, and Boba had told Din to leave, and Din had left. And Boba likes to talk about things, Din thought. He almost grimaced. He had had several uncomfortable conversations because Boba had asked him to, and he had survived all of them more or less in one piece. So Din supposed that having another probably wouldn't kill him, but still. We apologized to each other, Din thought. They had pressed their foreheads together in front of the entire summit, and they'd apologized. Boba had clearly forgiven Din, too, because he'd hit Reardon Hokan for insulting Din and had looked ready to hit anyone else who tried the same thing. Still, if he wants to talk, we can talk. The thought of leaving Grogu made his shoulders pull tight, but Din knew that Strill was good for her word. She'd protect the kid with her life. Paz wouldn't let anything happen to Grogu either, and even though most of the Mandalorians on Cronest followed ways that Din was only just beginning to understand, he wanted to believe that none of them would hurt a child. He looked at Strill. She softened. "He'll be fine," she promised. "I won't let anything happen to him. On my life, Jarvod." Din looked at her. He had no idea what Strill looked like, really, what color her eyes were, her hair, what she looked like when she was angry or happy or afraid or resolute. But he imagined that her mouth was set, that her eyes were fierce. She was telling the truth. She wouldn't let anything happen to Grogu. Din relaxed. "That's still a terrible nickname," he said gruffly. He looked over at Grogu, who was clinging happily to Boba's shoulder, looking at everyone around him. The kid didn't seem afraid. "What do you think, kid?" Din asked, catching Grogu's attention. Grogu's ears flicked up. "You mind staying with your Bavodu for a bit? I bet she'll take you to find your new friends." Grogu had liked Paz's kids, and Paz's kids had taken Grogu into the tribe without any fuss. They'd help look out for him, too, Din knew. Mandalorian foundlings were just as territorial and clannish as a litter of Anuba cubs. Grogu studied Din for a minute, blinking. Then he looked at Strill and broke into a grin.
"Patu,"
he said, reaching for her. Strill chuckled and reached back. She didn't even flinch when Grogu, having determined that Strill would catch him, leapt from Boba's shoulder to her hands, using the Force to propel himself along. Some of the others gasped or startled. Temsin even lunged forward, hands out, to catch Grogu if he fell, which softened Din towards her more than anything Temsin had said. But Strill wasn't bothered. She caught Grogu easily. "All right, Jetika," she said. "Come on, then. Vizsla and the Terror Triplets are around here somewhere, and if Myrda doesn't get to introduce you to the rest of your aunts and uncles, she's going to be upset." The rest of Grogu's aunts and uncles included Old Wirren, who had been a staunch stickler for tradition since Din had been small. Included the Alor, who was angry with Din, who was going to face Din on the ice in the morning, was going to fight him, maybe to the death, who had looked Din in the eye and pushed him away. And Grogu was Din's son. "He's a child," Din reminded himself, trying to push down the sickly pulse of fear that made him want to snatch Grogu back from Strill's hands and run for the mountains. "The Alor wouldn't hurt a child, any child." And Paz had sworn that he'd look after Grogu, too, and Annika would be with Paz. She'd never stoop to hurting a child, not even an Arrueti's child. "Not my child, either. Grogu will be fine," Din told himself. He pushed his anxiety down. To the kid, he only said, "Behave, okay?" Din looked at Strill. "Keep an eye on him?" "I will," Strill promised, serious again. There was nothing left to do but take Strill at her word. If Grogu wanted to see his cousins and meet the rest of Din's tribe, he'd find a way to do it, with or without Din's permission. At least this way he'd have someone watching him. "And we won't be gone for very long," Din thought. Din turned his attention back to Boba. "We can use Clan Ren's house," he said, "or we can go up the ridge to the fly." He didn't want to get too far from the gathering, but if some distance would make Boba more comfortable... "He came all this way," Din reminded himself, trying to set his own prickling anxiety aside. Din knew what Boba had done for him here. Boba hadn't wanted anything to do with other Mandalorians before. He'd been reluctant to follow Din to Kryze for help in the first place. He'd left the light cruiser as soon as he could. He'd helped Din save Paz and the Verdike, but he hadn't really wanted to, and Boba hadn't wanted to come to Cronest at all. But he did come, Din thought. He came here for me. Din thought that he knew why Boba hadn't wanted much to do with other Mandalorians now. He'd heard what some of the others said about Boba. "He went to Mandalore after his father died, looking for somewhere to belong," Din thought. His heart twisted. Boba wasn't that much older than Din, only a handful of years. When Boba had snuck into Kel Dabe as a teenager, Din had already been rescued by the tribe. He'd been bundled off with the rest of the foundlings, taken in with no questions, no reservations, and kept safe. Boba hadn't found that welcome on Caldave. No one took him in, Din thought. He hadn't been there himself, so Din didn't know if Boba had asked to be taken in, or if he'd just wandered around Caldave looking for names or faces that he recognized. But Boba hadn't stayed there. He hadn't been adopted into another clan. He'd gone back out into the galaxy instead and made his own name. No clan and no creed had extended its protection to Boba, so Boba had learned to protect himself. It had taken all of the bravery Din had been able to muster inside of himself to look across that room at the Allure and tell her that Din thought that she was wrong. It must have taken just as much for Boba to come here, Din thought. His heart thumped painfully against his chest. To face everyone, to face Kreese and her people. Everyone who told Boba that he's just a poor copy of his father, barely a person, let alone a Mandalorian. He came here and faced all of that for me. The least Din could do was make Boba feel comfortable, if that meant leaving Grogu down here with his cousins for a while and trudging back up the ridge. Marut's fine, said Boba gruffly before Din could work himself up to any sweeping gestures. Boba didn't sound happy about the idea of disappearing up in Clan Ren's stronghold, but he was willing at least. We'll see you at the feast, Strel promised, shifting so that Grogu could clamber up onto her shoulder too, which the kid did with enthusiasm. He better hope he doesn't outgrow that, Din thought, a flicker of amusement shining through his worry for a moment. In the recording on the holocron, Master Yoda had not been particularly tall, but he'd been big enough that only a Wookiee or an exceptionally big Deveronian would have been able to carry him on their shoulders without noticing. Rhett, Din said at a loss for what else he could say. He didn't want to voice his concern, didn't want to worry the kid or to offend Strel's tribe by implying that they wouldn't keep him safe. We'll only be gone for a little while, he thought. He and Boba had a lot to talk about, but they didn't need to go over everything here, just what was important, that was all. Just how we left things, Din thought, guilt prickling behind his ribs. And where we stand. I want to say it, I want to hear what Boba has to say. Din had assumed a lot about Boba. That was partly what had gotten them into that argument in the first place. Din had assumed that Boba had been Mandalorian and hadn't ever bothered to ask Boba if that were true. I know how I feel now, Din thought. He knew how he felt about himself, that he still felt Mandalorian and thought that he still wanted to be Mandalorian. And he knew that he loved Boba too, that he was still with Boba if Boba would have him. I think Boba feels the same, Din thought, remembering Boba stepping out between Din and Reed and Hokan. Despite his temper, Boba had always been very intentional. He usually knew what he was doing. He wouldn't have stepped out between Din and the Mando Are, wouldn't have claimed Din as an ally if he hadn't meant it. But still, we should get it out in the open, Din thought. He wanted to laugh. The last time Boba and Din had had a serious talk, after Din had gone to Mos Eisley without his armor on, without telling Boba, Boba had practically had to corral Din up in his tower. Now it was Boba who was trailing behind Din, moving just slow enough that Din could notice. Boba was nervous. Strangely, Boba's obvious apprehension set some of Din's own tangled anxiety at ease. He's nervous, too, Din thought. He apologized, too. This is going to be uncomfortable for both of us. Despite his apprehension, though, Boba didn't hesitate. He followed back through the crowd at Din's heels, and the two of them together apparently cut intimidating enough figures that no one tried to get in Din's way again. We are being watched, though. They were being talked about, too. Whispers were trailing after Din and Boba both. Din heard his name and Boba's name, heard Boba's father's name, heard Kreese's. No one was speaking loud enough that Din could hear what they were talking about, but he could feel their attention anyway, their curiosity. Some of them were sizing Din up, too, looking him over with warrior's eyes, studying his armor, the spear, the darksaber, searching for weaknesses. Din lifted his chin. He wanted to tug his helmet back on and hide behind it, but knew that doing so would show more weakness than leaving his face bare. It would show them that I regret what I did, he thought, that I made a mistake breaking the creed. His argument with the Allure burned hot in Din's memory. I didn't make a mistake, he thought, and I don't regret it, and I don't want anyone to think that I regret it. Din held his head up. He let the Mandoare look. He'd take their challenges, too, if he had to. He was already fighting Aiken Anson in the morning, already fighting his own Allure. He could fight a few more of these warriors if they wanted to try themselves against Din. Boba must have felt the sharp edges of the crowd's attention, too, because he picked up his pace a little and guarded Din's back. Kreese's order against fighting held, though, and no one was brave enough to take another stab at Din or Boba's honor where they could hear, so they made it to the edges of the crowd and the slope of the lakeshore without being challenged or hit from behind. On this side of the crowd, Din and Boba weren't quite such a spectacle. Several Mandalorians were watching them, but several others were busy, too. Wrens in black and yellow armor were dragging long tables down from the Morut, and several children had been sent off in the forest, returning in twos and threes with their arms full of wood. The familiar smells of wood smoke and Tingilar spice were starting to fill the air, rising warm over the cold smell of fresh snow. "There really is going to be a feast, huh?" Din murmured, slowing down a little so that Boba could walk at his side. Boba, still hesitant, matched Din's stride. Their boots crunched in the snow. "That's not what I expected." "Honestly," Boba admitted, "it's not what I expected either." "What did you expect?" Din asked, curious. "I thought, I don't know, that it'd be more of a war meeting, maybe." Din had expected maybe 100 or 200 other Mandalorians. He'd expected Kreese to organize them all into battle groups, to send them out into the stars after the remnants. This, her welcome to them all, what she'd said about Din, the challenges she was going to permit in the morning, all of it was different than what Din had expected. Boba was quiet for a minute as they walked up towards the house. Then he said, "I'm not sure. A war camp, maybe. Kreese was Death Watch. That was how they did things back in the day." "What's a war camp?" "I was never in one, was I?" Boba replied, sounding disgruntled. A week ago, Din might have winced at his tone, wary of pushing Boba with everyone's tempers frayed and Boba's dislike of other Mandalorians well known, but Din thought that he'd seen and survived the worst of Boba's temper now and wasn't too worried about pushing at him. The welts and cuts on the backs of Din's thighs had faded almost entirely, only very faint yellow bruises left, but Din still remembered earning them. He still remembered the sting of the fresh bruises, remembered the red stripes, remembered scraping his fingers raw, trying to hold still as Boba brought the cane down on him again and again. 30 strokes. Din had survived that, and he'd survived worse. The expression on Boba's face in that little room off the throne room, the blank despair, had cut Din more deeply than the reed cane had. So Din didn't flinch back. He just waited patiently for Boba to work through his thoughts. "This isn't easy for him either," Din reminded himself. Din and Boba were both outsiders here. Neither of them fit in with the rest of the Mandalorians. Though Fen Rao might have something to say about that. Din would bring up Rao later. Boba might have a better idea of what he wanted from them both. "They were always described to me," said Boba after a few seconds when he didn't manage to get a rise out of Din, "as something like a Tusken spring camp. A place to run raids from, but not a Morut or a Kel'dab. Death Watch would stay in one war camp for a while until they'd had their fill of raiding in that area, and then they'd pack up, move on, and go somewhere else." Din looked up at the stronghold. It certainly wasn't built to pack up and move with the seasons like a Tusken spring camp was. Everything in a spring camp could be broken down and loaded on Bantha back in just minutes. The ability to move from camp to camp was part of how Tuskens avoided reprisals for their raids. But Din understood what Boba was getting at. He'd expected to come to Crownest and find a field full of tents, starfighters and hunter-killers perched up on the ridges like birds of prey. Boba had expected to find his enemies. Din softened. I know what I want now, he thought. I know what I am. But Boba... Boba had told Din that he was not Mandalorian. Kreese had told Din that Boba wasn't Mandalorian. Koska, some of the warriors in the crowd had shouted it. But if no one ever offered him the choice, Din thought, if no one took him in like the tribe took me in, then how was Boba to know what he could and couldn't be? And if Boba had gone to Mandalore and run into Mandalorians who told him only that he couldn't be a Mandalorian, that only Boba's blood mattered, his genetic code, not how Jango had raised him. Boba calls me stubborn, Din thought, and I am, but he's just as stubborn. Boba was the sort of man who wore all of his scars proudly, who turned weakness into strength. He hadn't smoothed the dents out of his armor. If he'd been hurt as a child or a young man, when other Mandalorians had thrown him out, turned away from him, then Boba would have forged that hurt into armor. He would have started to hit first. That, Din thought, was any Mandalorian's instinct. And even if he'd never call himself Mandalorian, never been allowed to call himself Mandalorian, Boba still acted like one. That had been the source of Din's confusion in the first place. Boba was clearly fighting that instinct, that protective bluster, the urge to provoke an attack before one could be mounted by surprise. Now, he was trying to keep hold of his temper. He's trying for me, Din thought. The rush of affection that flooded Din's chest wasn't a surprise. He was used to feeling it around Boba. But it was deeper now, and Din thought that it was more genuine, too. It wasn't just simple affection, the sort of feeling Din might have had for a fellow warrior or even a brother or sister of his tribe. It ran through him like the rivers of Tatooine, deep and enduring, a wellspring in the desert. Boba saw it on Din's face, too, because he paused, footsteps faltering, his eyebrows drew together. What? He asked, suspicion flickering through his dark eyes. Nothing, Din said, because he knew that he and Boba probably should talk before Din dropped any emotional grenades on him, no matter how true and close Din held them. I'm just happy to see you, is all. Boba searched Din's face for a long moment, and then he softened, too. Me too, he admitted quietly. I wasn't sure if you would be happy to see me, I mean. Din snorted just as quiet. I wasn't sure you'd ever want to see me at all, he said. Boba, I'm sorry. Boba had apologized to Din already. He'd said it as soon as he and Din had caught up to each other on the lakeshore, their fingers tangled, their foreheads pressed together. Niseta, he'd said. I kneel. You don't have anything to be sorry for, Boba disagreed. I was the one who... I let my temper run away with me. My surprise, I didn't. In the back of his mind, Din wondered if he and Boba should wait to lob apologies at each other until they were behind closed doors. There were plenty of rooms in Clan Wren's stronghold they could duck into, after all, where they wouldn't be overheard. But Din didn't really care what the rest of Mandalore thought. The fault was mine, Din said, interrupting Boba as gently as he could. He hoped that he wasn't being disrespectful. Didn't even really know if the rules he and Boba had agreed to so long ago in the cool evening air at the top of Boba's tower still applied here, with the balance between them so upset. But the guilt on Boba's face made Din's stomach twist unhappily. I'm the one who didn't ask, Din continued in a rush. I never asked you if you were Mandalorian or not, not after Tython, I assumed. Boba huffed. I assumed, he said. I didn't realize that you'd... I thought that I'd been clear. On Tython, I mean. But you told me what your creed was. You told me what your people believed in. You were a foundling, right? Din nodded. And foundlings, children chosen by the tribe, are Mandalorian. Din nodded again. And children that choose the tribe, he added. That was important, too. Boba blew out a breath. I told you that my armor had been my father's, he said, didn't I? They reached the stronghold's door and ducked back into the cavernous great room together, skirting more clusters of Mandalorians. Some of the Night Owls who disappeared from the lake were here now, one or two with each group, and the room was full of conversations. Most were quiet enough, a low hum that Din barely noticed, but a few conversations could only be described as spirited. Din was pretty sure he knew what everyone was talking about. One of the Night Owls, Taryn Eldar, whose clansmen had tried to stand in Din's way down on the lake, looked up and met Din's eyes. Din ignored him and turned his attention back to Boba. "You did," Din allowed, pitching his voice lower so that he wouldn't be overheard. "But I was the one who decided that that meant you were Mandalorian too," he said. "I thought you meant that your father was Mandalorian, so you were too. But even after you started telling me about your father, about his people and what they believed, I didn't even think to ask you if you were Mandalorian. I just thought that you had to be." "Why?" Boba asked, matching his tone to Din's. Din took a deep breath. "Because you act like one," he said. "Or like how I thought a Mandalorian should act. Like one of my people." "I've met Vizsla," Boba said, and his tone was light, halfway teasing, even though his expression was still pinched with guilt and concern. "Not sure that's a compliment." Din scowled. "You have honor," he said. "You keep your word. You take care of the people under your protection. You're not afraid to fight. That was what a Mandalorian was supposed to do." Boba's teasing faded. "All right, Din," he said. "I'm sorry, it's not a thing to joke about, is it?" "No," Din said. "It's not," he sighed. "But now I can... It's different for me," he said. "I didn't realize how much blood ties or clan names matter to other Mandalorians until today," he admitted. Almost every Mandalorian who'd talked to Din or who'd addressed the summit had introduced themselves by their clan name. But in the covert, none of that had mattered. Din had just been himself, one of many, and his surname hadn't been important. There had only been one tribe, and individual warriors had been ranked on their skill, not by how many generations of them had lived on this planet or led that faction, fought in this war, or allied with that house. But if that's the Mandalore that Boba knew, Din thought, or the Mandalore he'd tried to be a part of... Well, Din didn't have to imagine the things Boba must have heard on the streets of Caldabe. He didn't have to imagine the disdain Boba must have faced trying to prove himself just as much a Mandalorian as anyone on the planet, wearing only his father's dented armor, using only his father's disgraced name. "Fennec told me that Boba was under Jango Fett's shadow," Din thought. "I just didn't really understand what that meant before." "And I didn't realize how little they mattered to you until after you'd left," Boba said. Din looked at Boba, surprised. They passed out of the great room and made their way down a hall. Din had looked at the mural here on his way out. It was the mural of the lone warrior facing down a dozen enemies, all cast in shades of bluish-gray. Boba grimaced. "Pretty much as soon as you left, actually," he said. "You told me to leave," Din said, confused now. Boba dipped his head. "I did," he said. "And I think I meant it at the moment, but as soon as you were gone..." Boba shrugged. His expression had shifted. Some of the guilt and concern had faded, replaced by something that turned inward. "As soon as you were gone, I wanted to apologize," Boba said. I was angry, not at you, but, I don't know, at Reeves, at Mandalore. And I had just asked you to be part of Mandalore," Din gasped, reviewing their argument in his head. He didn't want to. Boba and Din both had apologized, and Din knew that he at least wanted to put the argument behind them. But talking about it was important. Din and Boba both needed to understand each other. "So we don't do anything this stupid again," Din thought ruefully. On Tatooine, Din had asked Boba to go to the summit with him. He had called Boba a Mandalorian to Boba's face. He hadn't meant to hurt Boba, hadn't even thought that doing so would hurt Boba, but Din had hurt him. "Yes," Boba said. "And I was afraid, Din." Din blinked. "Afraid?" he asked. He wasn't sure he'd ever seen Boba afraid before. He'd seen Boba calm and Boba angry, Boba careful and thoughtful and cruel, but afraid. "Yes." Boba stopped walking. He and Din were alone now, or close to it. While the number of Mandalorians in the Great Room had grown, the halls of the Stronghold were still mostly empty. There was a Ren at the far end of the hall Din and Boba had walked into, wrestling with an enormous metal pot, but other than her, they were alone. "Yes," Boba repeated, looking Din in the eye. "I was afraid." "Why?" Din asked, bewildered. He racked his memory, replaying that argument, even though he didn't want to. Because I was afraid that you only stuck around because you thought that I was Mandalorian, too," Boba said, all in a rush. He flexed his fingers and met Din's eyes for a moment, then looked away. Din stared at him in shock. He didn't think he'd ever seen Boba this nervous before. Boba half-smiled, self-deprecating. "I know," he said gruffly. "It sounds foolish now, but at the time..." He trailed off and shrugged, looking away. "At the time, it felt like the galaxy was ending," Din admitted. His heart twisted. "I hurt him more deeply than I realized," Din thought. Fresh guilt bubbled up to dim some of the happiness behind his ribs. But Boba only snorted. "You too, huh?" It was Din's turn to grimace. "A bit," he admitted. He hesitated, unwilling to describe just how badly Din had been wounded in turn. But Boba had been honest with him, and honesty was one of their rules anyway. I felt like I couldn't understand you, and that you couldn't understand me either." Din wanted to describe that moment of loneliness he'd felt out in the desert, but wasn't sure how to. He couldn't describe how it had felt sitting on the edge of the plateau above Mos Pelgo. Din could still feel the shadow of it, the chill. Mandalorians weren't built to be alone, and when Din had thought that he was, his heart had broken. "Din," Boba started, grief crossing his face, but Din just shook his head. "I was being an idiot," he said. "It was... well..." Din tried to smile back at Boba. "It was an argument we were going to have eventually," he said. "It all would have come out at one point or another." He couldn't look Boba in the eye anymore, so Din looked around for a refuge instead. There was a door at the end of the hallway. Din hadn't poked his head into it earlier, but he hoped that it was another meeting room. Someplace Din and Boba could get a moment alone, truly alone, without having to worry about a Ren or a Night Owl sticking their buckets in between them. Boba grunted. "True," he allowed. He grimaced again and ran a hand over his head, skimming over his scars. "Din," he began again. I am sorry." "I know," Din said. "I'm sorry, too." Boba studied Din for a second, and then his expression softened. They had reached the door at the end of the hall. "We make quite a pair, don't we?" he said. Din gave him a genuine smile. "Dikutla," he said. The fist in his chest began to uncurl. "And Nuentcha, it's all right. There is no debt." There had never been a debt between Din and Boba. Din had realized that up in the mountains of Kronost with Paz. "Nuentcha," Boba agreed after a moment's pause. Din tried the door and found that it was unlocked. He pushed it open, inviting Boba inside, and grinned. "Good," he said, light with relief. "That's decided, then. We still need to talk about anything?" "We do," Boba said, rolling his eyes. He sounded fond, though, and some of that guilt had finally faded from his face, so Din counted that as a small victory, even though he'd known that Boba would probably want to talk more before he'd even opened the door. "After you, then," Din said. Boba nodded, slipping inside, and Din followed, pulling the door shut behind him. It had a maglock, which Din engaged before he turned around and surveyed the room. This one was smaller than the room he'd found to argue with the armorer in, but it was set up in much the same way. High geometric windows, a table in the middle, a lamp, a pair of paintings on the walls. Din set his helmet down on the table, tired of holding it, and turned to find Boba again. Boba was still holding his own helmet in his hands. He was watching Din, his eyes very warm and very dark, his fierce face softened by relief, by affection. He met Din's own eyes, then set his helmet aside too, and Din knew what was about to happen before it did. Boba took two steps to close the distance between them and reached up, catching Din by either side of his face, and pulled Din down into a kiss. Din met him eagerly. In his enthusiasm, he bumped his nose against Boba's forehead. Boba's fingers fumbled against Din's cheeks. Neither of them noticed or cared. Din made a desperate, hungry sound against Boba's mouth and ducked his head to make kissing Boba easier. Boba's mouth was warm and familiar. His hands were warm, too, though the warmth was muted by his gloves, by his armor. Din thought distantly that he'd want Boba's gloves and armor gone in a minute or two, but his immediate attention was entirely taken up by the warmth of Boba's mouth, by the promise of teeth as Boba nipped his lower lip. Stubble scraped against Din's jaw as Boba broke the kiss, pressing an apologetic one to the corner of Din's mouth when Din sighed at the loss, swaying into Boba's hands. Boba kissed the corner of his mouth again, and then the corner of Din's jaw, and then Din's throat. He had pulled Din in so closely that their armor clinked and rasped, jostled by their breathing. Boba's hands dropped away from Din's face. He set them on Din's hips instead, fingers curling against the stiff fabric of Din's kuta. Nose tucked underneath Din's jaw, Boba paused. Almost everything Boba did was done with intent. He was pausing for a reason. Giving Din an out, maybe, since the last time they'd seen each other, they'd fought. Kark that, Din thought. Boba, he said, his mouth already dry and hoarse, every nerve sparking with relief and frantic desire. Please. Boba growled, the sound buzzing hot against the thin skin of Din's throat, and didn't need any more encouragement. He pushed Din up against the nearest wall hard enough to rattle the paintings, hard enough to make want pool in Din's belly, the promise of bruises sparking more than desire in his gut. And Din went easily, not bothering to fight against Boba. He didn't want to fight Boba. He wanted Boba to keep touching him. Boba was more than happy to oblige. He pinned Din to the wall, pushing him up against it and following close, crowding against Din's body. Din let him, spreading his legs to make more room for Boba's body against his own. Boba made a pleased sound just underneath the corner of Din's jaw. His mouth had left Din's skin hot and flushed. The smell of him was dizzying. They had only been apart for a few days, but Din's whole body was lighting up like it had never been touched before. Din relaxed into Boba. He couldn't help it. That probably wasn't fair of Din, since relaxing into Boba's grip put nearly all of Din's weight, Beskar and all, onto Boba, but Boba didn't seem to mind. He made another deep, pleased sound and went back to mouthing kisses against the bottom of Din's jaw and pressed in as close as he could. Like this, with all of their armor between them, Din couldn't feel Boba's body properly. He couldn't feel Boba's heart hammering against his chest or the pads of Boba's fingers against his skin. He couldn't feel Boba's cock pressing against his own. There was pressure, though, and warmth, and Din couldn't help but rock into both. His breath came in harsh and fast and eager. He pressed his cheek into Boba's and closed his eyes. He clung tightly to Boba's hips. "Easy, Jerrica," Boba murmured, still pressing kisses against the soft skin underneath Din's jaw. The collar of Din's kuta would probably hide any bruises that Boba left behind, but it still made Din shiver, thinking about the rest of the Mandalorians seeing Din after this. "It's all right. It's all right," Din agreed, his whole body singing. "You're here." Boba made another rough noise and pulled away a little. Din tried not to whine at the loss and barely managed it. He curled his fingers tighter into Boba's robes. "I'm here," said Boba reassuringly. "I'm here, Din, and I'm sorry I didn't." "No more apologies," Din growled. He knew Boba. Once Boba started apologizing again, started talking, it'd be a while yet before Din could get Boba's hands back on his body, Boba's mouth back on his skin. They probably should talk. Din knew that they should. He was distantly aware of it, but... but he just didn't care. Not right now. Boba had fucked Din several times now, and each time had been its own experience, set apart in Din's memory. Oil-slick fingers moving inside him, Boba's sonic rattling over them. The texture of Boba's sheet scraping against raw, sensitive skin. Boba's mouth at the crease of Din's thigh. This time wasn't going to be like any of the others. Boba was everywhere, touching Din in a dozen places at once. His fingernails dug hard into Din's kuta, pricking faintly at Din's hips. The angles and edges of his armor pressed into Din's own. The texture of his robes was rough against Din's fingertips. Din didn't want to be touching armor or Tusken robes. Din wanted to be touching Boba. "No more," Din repeated insistently, even though Boba hadn't argued with him. Hadn't taken away his hands or his mouth or the pressure of his body pinning Din's hips, his belly. "No more," Boba finally agreed, his voice a ragged rasp, and pressed closer. His jaw was rough with stubble and scraped over Din's neck, warm and real, sending frisons of pleasure sparkling down Din's chest to swirl in his belly. "What do you want me to do instead, then?" Boba asked, his fingernails still digging into Din's hips. "If you don't want me to apologize." "Touch me," Din replied. He felt wild, desperate, like he'd die if Boba stopped touching him, if Boba pulled away again. All of Din's limbs were trembling like he'd run 10 clicks or tried to lift a bantha on his own. Boba rumbled against Din's jaw. "I can do that, Sherry," he said. "Good," Din growled, relieved. And then neither of them could spare enough attention to talk for a little while. Boba tugged Din down into another bruising kiss, and Din leaned into it with enthusiasm, every nerve on fire. Boba finally let go of Din's hips long enough to fumble with the buttons of Din's kuta, hissing a little in impatient frustration when Din's armor got in the way. Din helped where he could, releasing the seals of his cuirass, which Boba tore off and tossed aside with a clatter and a shower of sparks, kicking off his boots, stripping off his gloves. But Din hated to stop touching Boba, hated to break their kiss, and neither one of them was able to fully shrug out of their armor. After a series of fits and starts and half a dozen bruising kisses, Din ended up only half-dressed, boots discarded, belt tossed aside, bits of armor scattered all over the floor. His kuta was open from throat to groin. Boba hadn't fared much better, though he didn't wear a full kuta, just a smaller modified version that supported his beskar but left room for his robes. So Din was able to get Boba out of his armor almost entirely. He got frustrated trying to unravel Boba's robes and settled for getting his hands underneath them, his fingers hot against Boba's sides. Boba's kissing left Din dizzy, breathless. He sank more of his weight against Boba, pleasure fizzling and sparking inside Din's chest at the base of his spine. And now, without any armor in the way, Din could feel the warm, hard press of Boba's cock against his own. Only their underclothes were between them, growing damp with shared body heat and sweat and pre-cum. "Boba," Din said raggedly, digging his own fingernails into Boba's flanks. Boba hissed and rolled their hips together again, dragging his clothed cock over Din's. The pleasure flared wide around the edges with pain. "Boba, please," Din said, his voice cracking. Din was teetering on the edge of orgasm almost embarrassingly quickly. He didn't know if it was relief or leftover adrenaline or just the simple pleasure of having Boba's hands on him again, Boba's mouth, the drag of Boba's cock. But heat was climbing higher and higher, feverish in his blood. "I know," Boba rumbled. He sacrificed his grip on one of Din's hips to fumble between them, pulling himself out of his underclothes and doing the same to Din. Growling in frustration when he couldn't quite manage it and just tugged Din's underwear down lower on his hips instead. Din flushed, embarrassed, but Boba swept all of that aside within another second, fitting their hips flush together and wrapping his free hand around them both. When he started to move his hand, Din shouted, pleasure half blinded him. His hips jerked helplessly, almost of their own accord. The slide of his hand over Din's cock was rougher than usual. Boba hadn't had time to grab any oil, to even spit into his palm to ease the way. All he had to soften the rough glide was sweat and pre-cum, his grip verging on painful. But even that was good. Boba set a punishing rhythm, his calloused hand catching softer skin, And he had a long, low whine spilling from Din's throat within just a few tugs of his hand. Boba's cock was smoother, the texture of it almost silky compared to his rough hand, and the contrast, the heat of it, made Din's head spin. He dug his fingers into Boba's flanks until he could feel blood well up, Boba groaning his approval. Neither of them lasted very long after that. They didn't have enough coordination between them to kiss and just shared their breath instead, Din whining, Boba gasping, his sides heaving underneath Din's hands. Pleasure built until Din couldn't stand it anymore. He came with a hoarse cry spilling over Boba's hand, and Boba followed him half a stroke later. Din shivered all over. He'd thrown one leg over the back of Boba's to pull him closer, and the leg he was still standing on was trembling from the effort. Boba had most of Din's weight. Din's back was slick with sweat. He dropped his other leg back to the floor and drooped, tucking his head against Boba's. Boba chuckled, the sound of it tender and familiar against Din's cheek. "Hey," said Boba. Din closed his eyes. "Hey," he murmured back. They should move, should sit down at least, find a cloth to clean themselves up. But Din wasn't sure that he could walk just yet, and Boba was warm and alive against him. Din slid a little deeper into Boba's grip. Boba took him without complaint. He made another deep, rumbling sound, half a croon, and let Din flop against him. It was nice. Din could feel Boba's heartbeat strong and steady underneath his fingertips, settling back down from its runaway pace. For a little while, they just stood there, coming down from the height of pleasure together, reveling in each other's company. Well, I'm reveling, at least, Din thought, once he'd managed to actually string some thoughts together. I don't know about Boba, but if he had a problem, he'd make me move, probably. Finally, when Din's leg started to cramp, he raised his head again and leaned it back against the wall, blinking to clear them. "I am glad to see you," Din said, addressing the ceiling. Boba snorted. "I figured that out, Jerrica." Din thought about pinching one of Boba's flanks for a moment, but couldn't muster up the energy. "I mean it," Din said, still studying the ceiling. He'd half expected to see another mural up there, but the ceiling was the same shade of cool, muted gray as the walls. "It's... you didn't have to leave Tatooine just to see me." A thought occurred to Din, and he looked down at Boba, startled. "You left Tatooine," he said. Boba smiled at him. "You know," he said lightly, "I figured that out, too." Din did pinch him then. It did nothing to break Boba's grin. "Mirshab," Din muttered. Boba just shrugged. "Fair enough," he said. "I'm being serious," Din said. It was hard to look serious, with his armor tossed all over the room and his flight suit pulled open from chin to cock, his stomach wet with cum, but Din did his best. "Is it safe for you to be here? Is everyone else going to be all right? Are you going to be all right?" Boba huffed a laugh, mostly amused. "You want to talk about Tatooine now?" he asked pointedly. He was still supporting most of Din's weight. "I meant to ask earlier," Din admitted. "But then I got distracted." Boba huffed again. He couldn't really argue that point since he'd done a good bit of the distracting. "Tatooine's all right," he said. "Things are still holding for now. I left Fennec in charge." "Gorga won't notice that you're gone?" Din asked, concerned. Fennec was more than capable of running Boba's outfit for a few days, of course. She'd probably have double the revenue by the time Boba got back. But if Gorga had been looking for an opportunity to try to take back the throne... "Fennec's put the word out that I'm still on planet," Boba said. He tucked Din back into his underclothes and set him gently back on his feet. Din's knees shook a little, still weak from the aftershocks of pleasure, but they held Din's weight. "Everyone should think that I'm out with the spotted Anuba," Boba continued. He cast around for some of his own discarded clothes and made a noise of satisfaction when he found his belt, from which he pulled an old rag and wiped the cooling spend off of Din's belly, off of Boba's hands. "I left the palace on a speeder with Ashak, and didn't stop to pick up a ship off-planet until we hit Bestine." Din blinked, surprised. Boba's unhurried care soothed his nerves somewhat. If the situation with Gorga had gotten worse while Din had been gone, Din doubted that Boba would be so unbothered. "You didn't bring your ship?" Din asked. Boba shook his head. No, he said. I left it with Fennec. It's probably still on the landing bay at the palace. We hoped that anybody scanning the palace will be able to see it from Atmo, think I'm still around in the sand somewhere. Gorga's been quiet anyway, Boba added when he saw Din's face was still pinched with worry. We've done some digging. He's still in hot space, trying to round up enough fighters to try for another attack. Your friend Gita got the Ahra involved on her behalf. They've been asking discreet questions on Narshada and Nalhutta. Fennec's got her eyes and ears open for any movement, too, and so does about half the quarter. Gorga's mercs won't be able to surprise us again. Din let himself relax at that a little. He knew that Fennec would have things well enough in hand, at least for a little while, and as long as they got Boba back to Tatooine before anyone noticed that he was gone, things would be all right. I probably shouldn't hang around here for more than a few days, Boba added, apologetic. Din didn't know why. Boba was here because of Din. He was potentially jeopardizing his entire outfit for Din. He didn't have to apologize for that, at least. I've taken enough longer trips into the desert that a handful of days should go unnoticed, Boba continued. Everyone knows that I scat with Ashek or the Shaking Mountain, but any longer than that. Din chuckled. The sound was weak to his ears, nervous, but he couldn't do anything about that. His challenge to the armorer hung over Din's head like a sharpened blade. Don't worry, Din said, aiming for wry and light. I don't plan on being here for much longer either. Boba pulled away, frowning a little. Why not? He asked. You said that you wanted to stay. I do want to stay, Din said. But, well, after tomorrow, I think either Kreese will have to kick me out or the tribe will. Boba's expression darkened immediately. She has no right, he said. It's her gathering. She called it, Boba disagreed. But there's no king or council. She'd have to get the other clan heads to agree, and you've got more support here than you might think. Din thought of Reardon Hokan, of Aiken Anson, of the Armorer, of Wirin and Annika, of Paz. Paz had vouched for Boba, but the Armorer had decreed Din Darmanda. Paz wouldn't go against her word, not in this. I don't know about that, Din said. Trust me, said Boba. I don't know Rao personally, but I've heard of him. His opinion carries weight, and he's set himself in your corner. And you've got the Verdika still. Din did smile at that. I do, he allowed. Strill had put herself pretty firmly in Din's corner, too. He didn't know how well her affections for him would hold up against her own Alor's orders if her Alor sided with Din's and declared Din Darmanda, but he could at least count on Strill to look after Grogu. Maybe to hold her own people out of any conflict if it came to that. I saw that your Alor let you go, Boba added carefully. His eyes were dark with worry again. Din's smile went crooked. For now, he said. We were fighting tomorrow. She... He closed his eyes and shook his head. Someday Din might have the strength to tell Boba what had happened between him and his Alor. What they had said to each other, how Din had shouted. But today Din's own feelings were still too tangled, the fight too raw, love and joy and furious grief writhing in his belly like a nest of spit vipers, hissing and spitting and wounding each other. I challenged her, Din clarified when Boba's expression turned thunderous. I couldn't. She said that I couldn't be Mandalorian anymore, that I'm... Din broke off, shook his head. I told her that she was wrong. She is, Boba said, watching Din carefully. Are you sure you can fight her, though? These duels, they're no spars, Din, they're no playfights. Warriors have killed each other over matters of honor. Din's stomach twisted. He knew that the Armorer would certainly try and kill him if she could. That was what one did with the Darmanda. I know, he said. And you can do that, because I will fight her for you if you can't, Boba said. If you let me, you... She's your tribe, right? Din nodded. You love her. Din nodded again. I don't, said Boba bluntly. He set his jaw. If you don't want to fight her... I have to, Din said. He softened the blow of the words with another faint smile. In his chest, somewhere past the writhing knot of how Din felt about the Allure, love flickered, warm as a forge coal. He means it, too, Din thought. He'd risk his own life against her so that I don't have to. A year ago, Din would bristle. He would have snarled that he didn't need Boba to fight his battles for him. Even among the tribe, one warrior hadn't fought the battles of another. To need someone to stand up for you was proof of your own weakness. But that was wrong, Din thought, the knowledge blazing through him. I knew I could count on the tribe against an outsider, but against a brother, a sister. No one had ever stepped in to tell Paz to leave Din alone when Paz had pushed and pushed and pushed. No one had protected Din from the older trainees when he'd been younger, small and frightened and missing his home. Din had had to learn how to protect himself. They should have. Someone should have. Clan protected one another. But this is something that I have to do, he thought. If I don't fight her, Din said, then I prove her right. He proved that he was weak, Landurish, that he had broken when he'd broken the creed, and that Din could never be mended again. But I can. I am. I'm whole, and I'm Mandalorian. And I have to prove it to her. Boba searched Din's face, then sighed. Fine, he said. Fine. But just don't die, all right? Din snorted. I'll try not to, he said. Good, Boba returned. He looked Din up and down, then sighed. Is there a fresher here, he asked, or a room we can use with a bed? We need to talk some more, Jerrica. Boba's eyes were serious again. Din resisted the urge to groan. Can we wait? He asked. He knew that Boba was right. A few apologies and 5 minutes of frantic bumping Beskar didn't change the fact that they had fought on Tatooine and that they probably needed to talk about what they'd fought about, what they'd learned. What we need going forward, Din thought. But he grimaced. He really didn't want to talk about that here, with his head already so full of Mandalore and everything he'd learned. With at least 2 fights hanging over him. With whatever Kreese was going to do. He'd meant what he said. Even if Din did well against the armorer, he half expected Kreese to pull the ice out from under him at some point, to drive Din away, to name him as an enemy and an outsider. She wanted Mandalore. Din was currently in her way. Wait? Boba asked, tone skeptical. It's not something we should put off, Din. It's important. There's something. Din pounced on that skepticism. We don't have to put it off forever, just until we're done here, he said. On the way back to Tatooine, maybe, or after I drop my kid off again. Din, Boba began. Din shook his head. Consider it motivation for me not to die tomorrow, he said. We'll talk after the summit's over, okay? I swear it. Boba's eyes widened. He knew that Din didn't break his word once he gave it. Garatin, Boba grumbled, relenting. But fine, you're right. This is probably not the best place to have a talk like that anyway. After the summit, then. Din's shoulders dropped a little in relief. Good, he thought. That gives me more time to think about what to say. More time to figure out how to put everything that Din had pieced together over the last few days into words. So, what now? Boba asked, looking at Din. Back to the lake? Din hesitated. He hadn't expected Boba to ask him what to do next. Boba was usually the one in charge, with Din trailing happily behind him. But if he's giving me the choice, Din thought. He looked back at Boba. Boba's robes were still rumpled, his mouth still red from kissing Din. His robes were open halfway down his chest, and Din could see the strong line of Boba's collarbones, the warm brown skin of his belly. Din was only half-dressed, too. He hadn't even managed to pull his boots on yet. Well, Din said, reaching up to shrug all the way out of his kuta. Maybe not yet.
When Din and Boba finally tugged all of their clothes back on and walked back down to the lakeshore, they walked together, as they had walked down from Boba's tower into the throne room many times before. They were close enough that their elbows and their gauntlets knocked together and their steps were measured in time with each other. Din was dizzy with happiness, with certainty. It was a warmer certainty than he'd found after confronting the armorer, but it was just as strong. Boba was with him. He'd face off against all of Mandalore if Din needed him to. They were clan. That warm certainty carried Din along like a Jonda bird carried by warm desert air. He felt untouchable. Not even the thought of having to face the armorer on the ice in the morning slowed Din down much. "I'll have to face her," he thought. "But I won't have to do it alone, with no one behind me hoping that I'll win." He and Boba didn't speak as they made their way down to the lakeshore. They didn't have to. The last hour or so had taken care of that. They probably shouldn't have lingered so long, but Din couldn't bring himself to regret it. He had wanted Boba to touch him properly, and Boba had been pretty easy to convince once Din had stepped all the way out of his kuta. Had been happy to fuck Din against the wall hard enough that they'd knocked down one of Ulrich Wren's paintings. That Din had pressure marks on the backs of his shoulder blades and bruises on his hips. That Din could still feel Boba moving between his legs if he thought about it, Boba moving inside of him. Honestly, Din thought, trying not to limp too obviously or too proudly, the Allure could try to stick a knife in my back right now and I wouldn't even mind that much. She wouldn't, it would be dishonorable, but still. Din tried to tamp down his well-won happiness and focus on the gathering. He and Boba were close now, Din knew that he should pay attention. It was harder to drag his thoughts away from Boba than it should have been, but Din managed it. In Din and Boba's absence, the gathering had shifted again. The lakeshore now was studded with what looked like dozens of cook fires, the flames orange and bright against the growing dark of evening. It looked like night came quickly to Cronest, much like it did on Tatooine. Cronest's sun had already vanished behind the mountains, leaving a purpling sky in its wake, and outside of his armor, Din felt the temperature dropping, cold gathering around the Morut like an embrace. Wind stung his bare face. The cook fires were warm, though. Din could feel the heat of them 30 feet back, and as he and Boba got closer, he felt the warmth of other bodies, too. As far as Din could tell, none of the Mandoade who had answered Kreese's call for the initial gathering had taken the opportunity to slip away. Kreese had called an end to the official summit hours ago. Anyone who had wanted to leave would have had plenty of chances. But the crowds around the lakeshore were just as large as they'd been when Din had come down the ridge the first time. 500 or 600 Mandalorians, maybe even more, clustered together. The noise they made was tremendous. "But it's not... I don't hear any arguments," he thought. He could hear plenty of shouting, but none of it seemed to be in anger. In fact, the noise was joyful, as far as Din could tell, and that was almost as confusing as anything else that had happened here on Cronest. The air was fragrant with a dozen different spices and ringing with laughter. Din searched the crowd for the source of the noise, curiosity rising again, and found himself looking out over the ice. Sudden alarm gripped his heart. Past the warm light of all the fires, a mass of Mandalorians were fighting. Their armor flashed, the sound of Beskar on Beskar rose in the air, arms and legs flailed and tangled. While Din watched, a dim orange shape, Kippon Awad, slammed bodily into a Mandalorian in green, and they both went down with a tremendous crack. "No," Din thought, looking closer. His hand dropped to the darksaber, ready to interfere if he had to. "They can't be fighting. If they were, more people would be trying to help, right?" The majority of the Mandalorians along the lakeshore weren't paying attention to the tangle of limbs in Beskar on the lake. Not even Fen Rao was paying attention, and Kip was his Talvod. While Kip and the Mandalorian in green struggled, Rao was talking to another warrior, not bothered by Kip's fight at all. "What are they doing?" Din asked Boba, watching the chaos, still alarmed. Kreese had forbidden fighting, but at first or even second glance, it looked like the 30 or 40 Mandalorians out on the ice, all of them in an array of colors and signets, had decided to ignore her.
They were all running and scrapping and tackling each other all over the ice. Bodies collided, the crack of Baskar ringing out over the lake, and the warriors were all shouting and snarling at each other too, even as they fell. But I don't see any blasters or knives, Din thought, watching. No one that he could see was bleeding or was even that badly hurt. While he watched, Kip Awad sprang back to his feet and offered his hand down to the warrior he'd tackled. The warrior took it, Kip hauled him up, and they went right back to hurling themselves all over the ice. They weren't the only pair acting that way, either. A big Deveronian warrior in red armor slammed into a much smaller humanoid in yellow, a Wren, Din thought, and winced, thinking that the Mandalorian in yellow would stay down. But she sprang back up to her feet after just a moment and went after the Deveronian with gleeful bloodlust. "They're playing," Din murmured. He stopped walking, and Boba stopped with him a few paces ahead. It was hard to get detail in the growing darkness. The Mandalorians on the ice were moving too fast, skidding and sliding everywhere. The field was a wild tangle of limbs and sparking armor. "But there's got to be a reason they're out there," Din thought. "A reason why no one else is concerned." "There." A small, dark shape went whistling past Kip, narrowly missing the side of his head. Din couldn't see it very well, it was moving almost too fast for him to track without his visor on, but he was pretty sure that that small dark shape was a ball. "It's a game," Din said, answering his own question. Boba finally craned his head up and looked out at what Din had been fascinated by. He had tensed, picking up on Din's alarm, but once he had a second to look at what was happening out on the lake, he relaxed again. "Oh," he said. "Yeah. It's called, I think something like Getchuk, I think. They used to play it on Kamino." "What's the point of it, aside from eating ice?" Din asked, watching as the big Deveronian pivoted and went for a warrior of similar size, only to be bowled over from behind by the little Wren. Boba snorted. "To score as many points as possible, I think," he said. "Or to knock your friends on their shoves. Never made much sense to me, but then I never learned all the rules." "You didn't play anything like it as a kid?" Din grinned. "No," he said. "We played a game with paint grenades, though." That startled a laugh out of Boba, as Din had hoped it would. "Of course you did," he said. "Dini. Lunatic." "Come on," Din said, still carried along by happiness. "Let's see what else we can find that doesn't make sense." Boba sighed, but he followed Din into the mass of other Mandalorians easily enough. The mood here was lighter than it had been when these same warriors had been gathered out on the lake. Most of the hostility, the wariness, had faded, replaced by tentative calm. Well, maybe not calm, Din thought, as another terrific crack and an answering whoop went up from the Mandalorians playing Getchuk. But ease, maybe. Much of the tension from earlier in the day had faded. Din could still feel it coiled underneath the crowd, in the way that some Mandalorians looked at each other or looked at Din, calculating, across the fires, in the low rumble of whispers underneath the teasing shouts, in the defensive clusters of each clan around their cook fires, their children. But the coil of it was looser now. There was room at the feast to breathe. And, Din thought, catching sight of Kreese, to play at politics without every word being overheard. She was by a cook fire of her own, deep in conversation with a Mandalorian Din didn't recognize. Kreese only had a few of her night owls and sworn warriors with her, too. The rest were scattered up and down the lakeshore, embedded in nearly every group. Yeah, Din thought, she's not letting the calm go to waste. Boba caught on to what Din was looking at and snorted softly. "It's not a bad idea she's got," he said. He had tensed a little as he and Din had waded into the crowd, weaving between fire pit and fire pit, but was managing well enough. It probably helped that there was so much to look at that no one was looking too hard at Din and Boba. "A big feast like this, it'll put everyone in a good mood." "Or a better mood, anyway," Boba corrected. "At least until the Tihara starts flowing." "I think it already is," Din murmured, watching as a nearby group of barefaced warriors, all younger than Din, lifted small cups with a roar and knocked them back with all the enthusiasm of dedicated cantina crawlers. One warrior choked at the taste and doubled over, spluttering while his companions cheered and pounded his back. The burn of strong alcohol singed Din's nose. "They seem happy enough for now," Din observed. All of the young warriors were grinning and jostling each other. Boba just snorted. Until they start throwing their family names around, he said. Din winced. There had been plenty of that at the summit already, despite Kreese's insistence that the old feuds and grudges didn't matter anymore. Almost everyone Din had talked to had defined themselves by their clan and their house. He put it out of his mind. There was nothing Din could do about his own lack of clan and house now. He had Boba and Grogu, and that was more than enough. Speaking of the kid... Din tore his eyes away from the Getshook game and the Mandalorians who were feasting and drinking. He was curious about what everyone was eating, but pushed that aside for now, too. "Do you see the kid?" Din asked, knocking his elbow against Boba. "Or Strill, I suppose." Grogu was small, and there were children all over the place. Picking the kid out was going to be tough, but maybe looking for Strill. "There," said Boba, indicating the far edge of the crowd. Din followed his gaze and relaxed. At the last cook fire before the lake shore gave way to forest, Din found the children of the watch. Not all of them. The Alor was tending the fire, standing over a large smoking pot. A Mandalorian in black armor, probably Tamsin, was speaking with her, as was another short, thin warrior in alternating plates of red and yellow. Strill was sitting on a rock, one of her kinsmen beside her, and a pack of children, including Grogu, were playing in the snow nearby, chucking snowballs, building forts, diving for cover among the trees. Din didn't see Paz, though. He didn't see Annika. They're probably fine, too, he thought, trying to set the reflexive spike of worry aside. He was too far away to hear Grogu and the other kids playing, but some of them, like Grogu, were young enough that they didn't have helmets yet, and every face that Din could see was smiling. "Thanks," he said, forcing himself to relax. "Looks like the kid's fine." "Still wanna go get him?" Boba asked. Din should probably go join Kreese at her fire. He should probably try and introduce himself to some of the other clans. "But I like the kid better," he thought. Din nodded. "Yeah," he said. Boba inclined his head. "Come on, then," he said. "Be ready. I'm sure somebody's gonna want to talk to you." Din grimaced. "They can try," he muttered, more to be contrary than anything else. He knew he didn't need to be rude or dismissive. "I can't actually fight everyone tomorrow," he thought. "Best to keep the challenges to a minimum. I do need to be able to help Boba back at home." Boba snorted. He was probably just as, if not more, nervous than Din was. Din had at least come under Bo-Katan's protection. "Boba..." Boba's the only son of Jango Fett, Din thought. His name, his reputation, carries weight, and not the good kind, I don't think. The reaction to Boba's arrival had been decidedly mixed. The Skiratas were all right with him, Din thought, but he didn't immediately see the three Skiratas in their identical armor in the crowd. There were plenty of warriors around that Din recognized, though. Kreese had introduced him to 50 Mandalorians this morning before the gathering had started, and many of them were still friendly enough, even though Kreese had named Din the Mandalore and therefore the target of any ambitious Mandalorian. He was flagged down and roped into visiting a dozen cook fires as he tried to make his way towards Strill and Grogu. The party that had overtaken the lakeshore was a feast. Din had never been to anything like it, not even one of the great harvest feasts the Tuskens put on at the end of every growing season. Each fire sported something different. Din did, in fact, meet Torek Saxon and the rest of his brothers. There were 7 Saxon boys in all, Din learned, all of them tall and all of them as different from each other as night and day, and they were all eager to press Hanshun and Tihar into Din's hands. He accepted the Hanshun, and Boba sampled the Tihar. Lysistra Saxon, Torek's mother, turned out to be an imposing human woman with near-yellow eyes who seemed to tolerate Din at best. But she was Kreese's ally, however reluctantly, and she mostly left Din alone. Every fire Din visited was much the same. Young Ciri Ordo gave Din a piece of oosh cake and introduced him to her tiny clan. Some of the milder Eldar branches convinced Din to try a drink they called Netragal, black ale, which Din liked more than Tihar. Veshok Baroya dragged her much smaller mother Vera over, and they both plied Din with something they called Ko, a hand-sized creature that looked a bit like a Bespinian air shrimp, which Vera had cooked in spicy oil. Even some of the clans who weren't allied with Kreese welcomed Din, though they did so warily. Clan Kaldao had commandeered 3 cookfires and was cooking a different batch of tingilar over each flame, serving it to passers-by with a sweet and sour bread. Din and Boba both tried all 3, which won the approval of Clan Kaldao's patriarch, a withered old man who must have been at least 100 standard years old and still wore full Beskar Gam. "You're gonna have to roll me and the kid back up the ridge," Din muttered, using the last bit of bread to mop up what was left of his 3rd bowl of tingilar. It was so spicy that his eyes watered. Din loved it. "There's still 4 or 5 more fires to get past." Boba rumbled a laugh. He'd liked the tingilar as much as Din and had told Clan Kaldao's patriarch so. "I'd rather have bowls of stew pushed on me than challengers to duel at dawn," Boba pointed out. Din snorted. That was fair. He had expected more hostility, honestly. More resistance from the Mandalorians. Plenty of them had seemed eager to challenge Din earlier in the day, or to at least size him up. But that was before Kree set her people to work, Din thought. He'd seen a Night Owl or one of Kree's allies at almost every fire. He couldn't be sure of what they were doing, since whenever he'd tried to find one to ask, they'd disappeared or someone else had shoved food into Din's hands. But he could make a guess. "They're talking about me," Din thought. "Kree's is, she's using them to convince other clans to, what, support me? Or at least support her support of me." Thinking about it was making Din's head hurt, though that might have been the 3rd mug of Netragal he'd accepted from afar a few fires back. "I'm sure there'll be more tomorrow," Din muttered.
"More of what tomorrow?"
Fen Rao asked, materializing out of the crowd, Kip and Awad at his side again. Whatever game Kip had been playing with the other Mandalorians out on the ice must have ended then. Kip had finally taken his helmet off. Underneath it, he was flushed and cheerful, a round-faced young man with curly black hair and a nose that had clearly been broken once or twice. Both of his lips were split by a scar. Din blinked at them both. He'd last seen Rao behind him, talking to another Mandalorian in the crowd. He didn't know where Rao had come from. The sky over Cronest was fully dark now, though. Din and Boa hadn't managed to get very far or move very fast. "Rao," Din greeted warily. He looked at Boba, who had sobered. His expression wasn't openly hostile, but Boba was wary, too. Rao was old enough that Boba had known of him. That they might have known of each other years and years ago, before the Empire had laid waste to Mandalore.
"Jaren,"
Rao returned. Then he looked at Boba and folded a fist over his chest in a proper greeting.
"Boba Fett."
"I don't know you," said Boba, still wary. That answers that question, Din thought.
"No,"
Rao agreed,
"though I know of you."
"What do you want?" Din asked, deciding to cut directly to the point before Boba's wariness could transform into irritation. Rao smiled, but it was Kip who answered. "I want to speak with you," Kip said, looking at Boba steadily. Boba looked back.
"Why?"
he asked. "I don't know you either." "No," Kip said. "But your father saved my father's life. I'd like to pay that debt." Boba stiffened. "Nuentia," he said stiffly. Kip grinned. "Not to you, maybe," he said. "But to us, yes, there is."
"I won't take Jaren far,"
Rao added, amused again.
"Jaren, perhaps we can wait here. Debts are a private matter."
Din eyed Rao narrowly. He planned this, he thought. Din didn't doubt that Kip was telling the truth. There probably was a debt between his father and Boba's. Jango was dead and couldn't be repaid. What Kip was saying made sense. The timing was suspicious, though. But if Rao wanted to speak to Din without Boba, and if Kip and Boba had business, Din supposed that the gathering was crowded enough that no one would try anything stupid, and he could humor Rao again. "All right," Din said, taking a reluctant step away from Boba. "We can wait." Boba shot Din an unreadable look, but finally dipped his head. "Fine," he growled. "We can talk." They separated. Kip drew Boba a little ways away from the crowd, far enough away that he wouldn't be overheard, but close enough that Din could still see him, could intervene if Boba needed him to. Rao gestured at an empty spot beside another cookfire. This one hadn't collected a clan around it yet. Din supposed it was good enough. Once they were alone, Din turned to Rao again. "So," he asked. What is it? Rao spread his hands.
What makes you think I want anything more than to help Kip settle an old debt?
He asked. Din glared at him. I'm not stupid, he said. You wanted to talk to me without Boba overhearing. Rao shrugged.
Possibly, he allowed. Though the two of you were close, aren't you? One might assume that whatever one says to you, Boba Fett eventually hears.
He does, said Din, still glowering.
Then I'd have no reason to get you by yourself.
Rao's eyes were glittering, bright with mischief. Din's scowl deepened. I've had too much black ale for this, he thought. He should have stopped after the first mug. Spit it out, Din said flatly. What do you want? Rao sighed.
I want to help,
he said.
Is that truly so hard to believe?
Honestly, yes, said Din. I don't know why you'd want to. I don't know what you'd get out of helping me, helping Boba. Boba's not exactly popular with Kreese's people. To most of the people here, I'm a stranger. What's your reason for helping me? Rao's eyes turned up at the corners.
Must I have a reason?
He asked lightly. Din resisted the urge to flash his teeth. Yes, he said. No one here on Kronest had done anything without reason since the gathering had begun. Not Kreese, not the Armorer, not even Boba or Din, and certainly not Rao. Din was grateful that Rao had decided to side with Din since he and Boba both needed allies here, but Din wanted to know what Rao expected to get out of such an alliance. He didn't think that that was an unreasonable thing to ask. I've already sworn to two quests, mostly by accident, he thought, remembering the past few months at Boba's side fighting off a Hutt boss or at Kreese's stumbling along in her vision of a new Mandalore. If I swear on to a third quest, I'd like to at least know about it beforehand. Rao just kept smiling.
Fair enough, he allowed.
Then he shrugged.
I'm an old man,
he said.
I've been many things. A warrior, a pilot, a rebel, an exile. But mostly I've just been a protector.
Din narrowed his eyes. What does that mean? He asked. What do you protect? Rao studied Din thoughtfully.
In the old days, he said.
You. Din stared at him. Rao chuckled.
The very first protectors were formed as a personal guard for Mandalore the Great, he explained. He was a wise and cunning warrior, fresh from a terrible war with the Jedi, and wanted to keep his people united instead of watching them fracture back into their bickering, squabbling clans again. So he called for the finest warriors of each clan to be sent to his side, where they served as his guards and his battalion, fighting against Mandalore's enemies instead of each other.
And these warriors, they joined the Mandalore without any argument, Din asked, skeptical. He tried to imagine the finest warriors of some of the clans he'd met today, of Clan Kreese, even, flocking to Din's side to fight for him, and couldn't. If they were the best, why didn't they challenge him? Why didn't they refuse?
I imagine that in reality some did refuse,
Rao said.
The stories don't say. But many did not refuse. Why would they? Mandoa ba Mandalore.
Din blinked. Mandoa and the Mandalore, he tried. Language and king?
Close, said Rao. It's been a while since I was in the schoolroom, but the translation is our language and our leader, I believe. It's part of the Resulnare.
Our language and our leader. The words made the hairs on the back of Din's neck stand up. The flames of the cook fire snapped and crackled.
Do you know the Resulnare?
Rao asked, his tone still light. Din hesitated out of reflex. He still didn't know what Rao wanted, and if Rao found out just how little Din actually knew about being Mandalorian. What? Din thought. He'll leave? Fine. I don't need his protection. And if he's going to offer it anyway, he'll eventually find out. There's too much I don't know yet. Rao had been born and raised Mandalorian. Din wouldn't be able to hide the gaps in his own knowledge indefinitely. And if Rao truly did want to help, if he'd decided to side with Din against whoever else might not, then maybe he'd be able to teach Din what the Resulnare actually was. He'd probably be nicer about it than Kreese, anyway. Din took a deep breath and a gamble. No, he said. Not really. I know the idea of it. I know the Super Commando Codex, which is based on the Resolnare, right? Rao, to his credit, didn't show any surprise. He only nodded and said,
That makes sense, I suppose, with your Fett. I'm sure he taught you what he knew when he would know the Super Commando Codex. Would you like to learn the Resolnare?
Rao asked. Again, he offered it to Din without judgment, without disdain. Hesitant still, Din nodded. So Rao told him.
Bajur Babeshgargam,
Rao said, his voice falling into a worn and warm cadence.
Arnov Alit Mandoa Bamandalor Anvenkuyanmi.
He let the words hang in the air for a moment, fragrant as Tingilar. Then he translated. Education and armor, self-defense and clan, our language and our leader, all help us survive. All help us survive. The words echoed behind Din's ribs. He felt them. Boba had only known the line about protecting oneself and one's clan. Kreese hadn't said much about the Resolnare at all, except that many Mandalorians followed it as their way. Din hadn't heard it in its entirety before, but now... Education and armor, Din thought. The care of foundlings, honoring your Beskar. My tribe did that. He could see the shape of the creed there, in Rao's words. Din's people had believed in fighting to protect itself, too, had believed in the strength of the tribe. But they hadn't believed in learning Mandoa, and the only leader they'd followed had been their armorer. The Resolnare doesn't say anything about how you break it, either, Din thought, with some bitterness. It's offering guidance, not an ultimatum. The creed told a warrior what they had to do to be considered Mandalorian. If the Resolnare was all Rao had said, it sounded like it only told a warrior what they should do. Is that why Kreese wants me to swear it? Din wondered. She'd asked him to on the Gatua. She'd told him that most Mandalorians would accept Din if he decided to follow the Resolnare. Din looked at Rao, who was still watching Din with the same mild interest he'd had from the beginning. Din wondered what Rao was thinking. If he regretted offering Din his help now that he knew just how little Din knew about being Mandalorian. Din swallowed. The words of the Resolnare were still echoing and ringing inside of him, pure as struck Beskar. Thank you, Din said sincerely. Rao just inclined his head.
For one who did not know the words, he said, you do a very good job of acting them out, you know.
Din frowned. What do you mean? Rao flicked a hand.
I think, he said dryly, that you've probably got more honor in your right hand than most warriors here have in their entire clan line.
Din thought about what he'd done with his right hand not even an hour ago, how he'd clutched Boba to him and flushed, though he hoped that Rao thought that it was just the compliment that had embarrassed Din, not anything else. I don't, really, Din said. He looked Rao in the eye. I broke my creed. I'm, to all of the children of the Watch, I'm Darmanda. There is no honor in that. Rao didn't flinch or recoil.
Are you Darmanda?
He asked. Boba had asked Din that question, too. He'd asked if Din was still Mandalorian, if the armorer was wrong. No, said Din. I don't think so.
Then I don't particularly care what the children of the Watch think of you, because I am not a child of the Watch, said Rao.
He smiled again, tiredly.
You're not the only one who's broken their creed or their word, either. Most of us have, at some point. For many, it was the difference between life and death. That's why Lady Bo-Katan declared that whatever is decided here will be Sin Vitin, a new beginning.
Did you? Din asked before he could stop himself. He knew that it was a dangerous question. If Rao took offense, he'd be well within his rights to add himself to Din's list of opponents in the ring tomorrow. Break your creed, or what you have instead of a creed. Rao was silent for a while, studying the cook fire's dancing flames. Din let him have his silence. He took the lull in their conversation as an opportunity to check to make sure that Boba was still okay. He was, though he was still talking with Kip Awad, his expression skeptical, and then looked around for Grogu, too. He found the kid 100 yards away, still playing with Paz's kids by the last fire at the end of the lakeshore. Strill was there, too, her feet kicked out from where she'd sat against a rock, and so was another warrior in black armor. Paz and Annika still hadn't reappeared. Din hoped that they were with each other, that they were catching up, recovering from all their time apart. Din let the noise of the gathering wash over him. He could still hear the words of the Rezalnar in his head like Rao had just spoken them again. He waited. Finally, Rao said,
"I broke my vow to my protectors."
He was still gazing into the depths of the fire, an old memory shone in his eyes.
"I swore to fight with them, to die with them if I had to. But when their deaths came, I wasn't there."
He lifted his head and looked at Din again. The grief in his eyes was like a knife.
"So, yes, I think."
"The protectors are gone?" Din asked, surprised. Rao nodded, his face creased with that grief.
"My band of them, yes," he said. "I've had a few new recruits recently, but we are now only 4 when we were once 30 or more."
He sighed.
"That was, years ago now. Gar Saxon killed them."
Several comments from the morning suddenly made a lot more sense to Din. "Oh," said Din. "I'm sorry." Rao lifted one shoulder. Some of the mildness, the amusement, had left him.
"That debt is paid," he said. "Gar Saxon's dead, and most of his marauders dead with him. But you asked, Mandalore, and that is my answer. Yes, I broke my creed, if you consider the vow I swore to my people my creed."
"That's what my creed is," Din said, "or what it was, a promise to the rest of the tribe."
"And now?"
Rao asked. Din lifted a shoulder back. "Now I'm figuring it out," he said. He scrubbed the back of his neck. "I like the Rezalnar," he admitted. "But I don't know if that's what I want to follow, not yet."
"If you have questions, this is the place to ask them,"
Rao pointed out, folding his arms across his chest.
"There are representatives here from just about every creed and code I've ever heard of. I'm surprised that some of your people are here, actually. The Kirad are not fond of the rest of us."
"No," Din muttered. "They're not."
"But,"
said Rao,
"we've moved away from the original question. You asked me what reason I had to ally myself and my people, few as they are, with you. So, your answer." "I am a Mandalorian protector," Rao said. "You are the Mandalore. Defending the Mandalore is my duty. My original duty, perhaps, and one I've not had the chance to meet in quite some time."
I can't really be the Mandalore," Din protested, staring into the fire. He didn't want to look at Rao anymore. He was afraid that he'd trust Rao too easily. He heard the smile in Rao's voice anyway.
"We've already had this argument once today,"
Rao said.
"But we can have it again if you like. Why not?"
"Because I don't know anything about Mandalore, not really," Din said. He dragged a frustrated hand through his hair. "I know stories, a little history, but the Children of the Watch, I didn't learn anything about Mandalore from them. I only learned how to be a child of the Watch."
"The Children of the Watch are Mandalorians,"
Rao said reasonably.
"Just not the only Mandalorians, perhaps. Try again."
Din scowled. "Kreese's claim isn't true," he said. She's got her own angle. She wants to name me Mandalore so that everyone comes for me tomorrow, not her. So that she can pick up what's left after the dust settles."
"It might be true that her claim on your behalf isn't complete,"
said Rao carefully.
She named you Mandalore, but that doesn't mean much until some of the other clans agree with her. A Mandalore without the Mandoade is not much of a leader.
But, he added when Din opened his mouth to jump on the point,
you certainly have a claim to the title.
He ticked points off on his fingers.
You won the Darksaber in fair combat. You are a Mandalorian. Your sense of honor is, quite frankly, stronger than Beskar. You have and wear Beskar, too, and I'd bet a fair portion of my own that you earned your armor fairly. You have allies who'd support your claim. As long as you don't get yourself killed tomorrow, Din Djarin, you are a strong contender.
A contender that Kreese wants to put on the throne to rule through, Din growled. Rao just lifted an eyebrow.
Will you let her?
He asked. That stopped Din in his tracks again. What?
Will you let her?
Rao repeated patiently. He was amused again, the corners of his eyes turning up in another smile.
You say she wants to rule through you. I'd agree that she at least has something to gain from all this. She very rarely does anything that does not benefit her or her clan. Many of the great clans think that way. But even if she does want to see you crowned as Mandalore so she can try her hand at puppetry, will you let her?
Probably not, Din admitted, grimacing. He could take orders well enough, at least from Boba, but... But Kreese isn't Boba, he thought. And Boba's earned my obedience. Kreese, she wouldn't be treating me like a lieutenant in a syndicate or an outfit, either. She'd be ruling Mandalore in my name. He didn't like that idea much. Din wasn't the right person to rule an entire people. He could maybe manage a squadron's worth, he thought, but not a planet. But Din wasn't keen on the idea of letting Kreese tell him what to do or say, either. If she wants to rule, she can do it under her own name, he thought, not mine.
So what worries you?
Rao asked.
That you won't have what it takes to lead us? The Mandokar?
All of it, Din said. All of it worries me.
Will you back down from your challenges tomorrow?
Rao's gaze was steady. He was being so maddeningly reasonable that Din wanted to punch him. But he couldn't lie. No, Din said. I won't. He wasn't particularly worried about scrapping with Aiken Anson, but fighting the armorer, that did worry him. Din still didn't want to hurt her. He didn't particularly want to run the risk of getting seriously hurt himself, either. Gorga the Hutt wasn't going to hold off trying to take Tatooine forever, and Din wanted to be able to fight to protect Boba and the rest of his mismatched tribe. But he wasn't going to run away.
Then you are as close to a Mandalore as we've got, at least for tonight,
Rao said, sounding pleased.
And my duty is clear. The Protectors are at your service. All four of us,
he added, and grinned. Rao meant that. He did. His conviction shone in his weathered face, just as Din's conviction had kindled in his own chest, facing down the armorer. Din smiled back. All right, Din said, checking again to make sure that Boba and Kip hadn't started to trade blows. The two of them were still talking together quietly. The rest of the summit was still mostly peaceful. Another game of Getchook had started out on the ice. Grogu was trailing Myrda, Paz's youngest foundling, around while Strill watched. Then I have some questions for you, if that's okay. Rao inclined his head, and his expression this time was approving.
Ask them,
he said. So Din did. Rao answered as many of Din's questions as he was able. He helped Din understand the clans that had come to the summit, the tangled history between some of the houses. House Vizsla, in particular, had many enemies, though Rao had assumed until Paz had shouted his name earlier that all of the Vizslas were dead, and the various alliances and feuds that had stood for 1,000 years before the Empire had come and turned it all to ash. He even told Din about Kreese's first 2 tries as Duchess of Mandalore, too. During the Clone Wars, Rao said, it had been Kreese who'd rallied a resistance against Darth Maul, a Sith Lord who'd tricked and slaughtered his way onto the throne of Sindari. Kreese had ruled for less than a year before the Empire had swept in and declared Mandalore part of the Empire. Kreese had objected to their rule, and Gar Saxon hadn't, so Saxon had come into power and Kreese had been driven out, betrayed. She disappeared for years, Rao said, only to return with a formal resistance a few years before the Battle of Yavin. That resistance, which Rao had fought for, had thrown down Clan Saxon. But Kreese had only been left to rule for a few months, her second go. After the Mandalorian resistance had taken the planet from Saxon, the Empire decided that Mandalore was more trouble than it was worth, and they had glassed the planet. Glassed most of the system, started the purges and the hunt for Beskar. Which leaves all of us, Din thought, when Boba and Kip finally returned and Din stood, stretching, his mind whirling with everything that he'd learned. The survivors. And it leaves Bo-Katan. Rao's information hadn't really shed any light on what Kreese wanted with Din, but it did help him understand her fervor, her determination. She had lost everything, her entire people, to the Empire, twice. She was trying to get that back. Din couldn't fault her for that, not with what he'd done to get his family back from the Empire. That's strong motivation, Din thought, as Kip and Boba finally separated and rejoined Din and Rao. I understand what drives her. But what she hopes to get out of that drive. Kreese's expectations from the summit were still a mystery to Din. Honestly, at this point, he was ready to just let that mystery lie. He'd find out eventually. He was more concerned with the expression on Boba's face as he came back. Kip looked cheerful again, but Boba's eyes were drawn down together. His mouth was set in a quizzical frown. All right? Din asked him quietly. Boba looked up. Yeah, he said slowly. He dipped his head at Kip and Rao. Just got some things to think about. Rao neatly took up the conversation again.
So do we all, I think, he said.
When Kip made it to Rao's side, Rao stepped away from Din and the cook fire.
We'll leave you to enjoy the rest of the feast, then, he said.
He mirrored Kip's gesture from earlier, closing his hand into a fist and pressing it over his Carta Beskar.
Jaren, remember what I said. We're at your service.
Then he left, Kip trailing along behind him. Din and Boba both watched them go. He really does think that you're the Mandalore, doesn't he? Boba said. Din blew out a breath. I think he does, he said. What's that mean for you tomorrow? Honestly, I'm trying not to think about it, said Din. He cut Boba another glance. The ponderous expression on his face hadn't eased. What about you? What did Awad want? I'd rather not talk about it just yet, Boba said. Din's eyebrows went up in surprise. Boba grimaced. I know, Jarika. It's just, I need to think about it is all. I wasn't expecting what he offered. So he did offer Boba something. Boba was allowed to keep his privacy, though. We can add it to the list, Din said wryly. You're all right, though, really. Boba finally cleared some of his heavy expression away, shaking his head to scatter whatever thoughts were dragging him down. Really, he promised. He even managed a crooked smile. It's just, it's been a long day. It has, Din agreed. He looked over towards Strill and the kids again. There weren't too many clans in between Din and Grogu now. Wanna grab the kid and disappear for the night? There's room for us on the fly. That, said Boba sincerely. Sounds good. Of course, they didn't manage to just sneak in and make off with Grogu unscathed. All three of Paz's kids knew Din and knew Boba through Din, and they'd mostly gotten over their wariness of them both. Grogu's doing, Din was sure. Took, Paz's son, saw Din and Boba coming and immediately declared that Din was on his team, not Kieran's, which meant that Kieran snatched up Boba and both of them were dragged into a game of hide and explode, though the kids were using snowballs instead of paint grenades. It was another hour before Din and Boba could extricate themselves, and Din's kid, from the mad pack of children. Paz's foundlings had been joined by Annika's kids. She'd managed to escape the fall of the Navarro Covert with four, and some of the kids from Strill's tribe had joined in too, and the foundlings of a third. Din had seen the third Allure cooking with the armorer, and that tribe had brought seven of its foundlings. Playing with the kids soothed the hurt in Din's chest that he'd been ignoring for months. Their laughter finally started to pull some of the shrapnel out of Din's chest, started to balm that wound. The tribe will survive, Din thought, later, after he'd managed to convince Grogu that it was time for bed. Boba had shooed away his gang of kids, too, and was speaking quietly with Strill while Din brushed snow out of Grogu's clothes and tucked his cloak up around the kid to help him warm up.
Blah,
Grogu said sleepily, patting Din's Carta Beskar. Din hummed wordlessly back at him. The tribe will survive without me. I didn't doom them. They're going to be okay. Din couldn't be a part of them, but they'd survive. That was good. Din could live with that. Wanted to make sure she'd be all right with all these Karkin kids running around, Boba reported, finally disentangling himself from the foundlings in the snow and joining Din for the trudge back up to the ridge. She said she would be. Vizsla's due back soon, she said. Where'd he go? Din asked, curious. He wanted to talk to Paz. He wanted to talk to Annika, too, though he didn't know if she'd want to talk to him. Din had missed her, and he thought that if they'd managed to get past the Darmanda thing, Annika and Boba would get along well. Strill said something about his wife, Boba said. Din nodded. So they are okay, then, he thought. Annika, Din said, my sister, we all grew up together. She anything like Vizsla? Boba asked. The path back up to the ridge was well-worn into the snow now. The air around them had grown truly cold. Grogu made another sleepy sound and shivered against Din's chest. Din smiled. No, he said. She's been the best of us since we were kids. You'll like her, I think. She's a bit like Fennec. The galaxy could use a few more people like Fennec in it, Boba agreed. He rolled his shoulders. His armor was splattered with snow. One of the kids had put a snowball down the back of Boba's robes and shrieked in surprise when he'd retaliated immediately by scooping that kid up and lobbing them, gently, into a snowbank. You've got a comm on the fly, right? Boba asked. Should probably check in with her, make sure things are still going well. She'll want to see you, too. Din sighed. Of course she will, he muttered. Yeah, I've got a comm. Tatooine's far, but we should be okay to reach her. Let me get the kid cleaned up first, yeah? Yeah, Boba agreed. When they made it to the ridge, they found that some of the ships had departed for the night. A few were hanging up in the sky in orbit. Din was sure that a few more had scattered to the high mountains to defensible positions. Nothing had been agreed to, after all. Din was too tired to bother moving the fly, though, and if Paz had taken the Huntress back to the mountaintop to be alone with Annika, Din didn't need to barge in. He just dropped the plug door, ushered Boba inside, and followed him up. They separated once Din had the door closed and sealed behind them. Din took Boba into their bunk room and cleaned the kid up in the cramped fresher, swapping out Grogu's wet clothes for much warmer ones. The kid tolerated that without too much fuss. He was so tired he could barely keep his eyes open, his ears were drooping, and his head nodded back and forth as he fought sleep. Had fun today, you little womp rat? Din asked once he'd gotten Grogu warmed up enough. Grogu agreed. He cracked an eye open and reached up with a claw to pat Din's cheek. Din hadn't put his helmet on all evening. Your cousins played nice?
You played nice? Din asked, teasing.
Grogu insisted, waving his hands. Din chuckled. All right, then, he said. He set Grogu up in the makeshift hammock he'd strung across the ceiling when he picked the kid up from the temple on Yavin. Go to sleep, then. You've earned it. Grogu asked, rolling in his hammock gracelessly. I'll be in soon, Din promised. Just go to sleep, kid. Paz's foundlings had worn Grogu out enough that the kid didn't argue. He was asleep before Din had finished shedding his armor and had swapped out his wet, cold clothes for dry ones. Din piled his armor up neatly by the foot of the bed, hung his kuta up in the fresher to dry, smoothed down the ruffled edges of his beard, his flyaway curls, and then went to find Boba. Boba was in the cockpit. He'd started to peel off his own armor, but had only gotten halfway. He had the comms up, and Fennec's face flickered over the top of the holo display. They were talking quietly, Boba's voice a low rumble that filled up the ship. When Fennec saw Din walk into comms range, she lifted her eyebrows. She looked tired, but well enough. She hadn't acquired any new scars, at least, and what Din could see of the palace behind her was in one piece. Nothing was on fire. Jaren, said Fennec warmly. All right, then. Din dipped his head. He was glad to see her. All right, he said. How are you? How are things on Tatooine? Fine, Fennec assured him. How are you? How's this, what, summit going?
We're all still alive, at least, Din reported.
Fennec laughed. They spent another 10 or 15 minutes catching each other up. The situation on Tatooine was holding for now, though the spotted Anuba and the Shaking Mountain both had reported seeing strange ships in the skies above the desert.
You probably only have another day or two, boss, Fennec warned.
We've got the palace more or less on lockdown. No one's coming in or out except our people, and I'm monitoring for outgoing transmissions, too, since we still don't know who's been leaking information to Gorga. But Gorga will figure out that you're not on planet eventually.
Boba grimaced.
Noted, he said. We'll be here another day, at least, but the day after. He didn't say, Jarek has gone and challenged at least two other Mandalorians to an honor duel, and he might die tomorrow, and if he does, I'm going to start a war with the Children of the Watch. But Fennec clearly heard him say something along those lines anyway, because she narrowed her eyes fiercely.
What? She asked silkily. Do you have tomorrow that's preventing you from coming home?
Din and Boba exchanged a glance. Boba cleared his throat.
Mandalorian business, he said. Sorry.
Din grinned, but Fennec only rolled her eyes.
I'm not coming out there to rescue you, she warned.
She looked at Din, too.
Either of you, so try not to get killed, all right?
We'll try, Din said, still grinning. He knew that it wasn't that funny, what he was going to face tomorrow, that it was nothing to laugh about, that it was only how tired he was, how happy he was to be back with Boba, that was making him grin. But he didn't want to stop. Boba was looking at him with open affection, too, and Din didn't want to do or say anything that would pinch Boba's eyebrows back together, that would make him frown. Fennec muttered something derogatory under her breath in Ril, but Din could tell she was mostly just relieved that Din and Boba were both okay.
See you in a few days, then, she said. And, Jarn, be careful.
She cut the call, the blue light that had been filling the cockpit cutting out and leaving only the light from the stars shining through, a faint orange glow down on the ridge marking the feast that must have still been going. Din blinked at her abruptness.
Why'd she just tell me to be careful? Din wondered.
Boba snorted. Maybe because the last time you were out of her sight, you almost got caught by a slaving gang, Boba said.
Din winced.
I had help, he protested.
A Jedi's help, Boba agreed.
He stretched, his shoulders creaking. That Fennec didn't know about until she got down there, she said.
Din scowled. I was fine, he said. He'd thought that this matter was settled anyway.
You were, Boba agreed, soothing. He stood and started to shed the rest of his armor. But still, it's her job to be protective.
Din sighed. He supposed that that was true.
It'll be fine, he said. He had never fought with the armorer before. He didn't know how fast she was, how strong, how good she was with her hammer, if Din even had a chance of winning their fight. But,
hey, said Boba.
He reached out and touched Din's shoulder gently. Some of his amusement had faded, but the affection in his eyes was still easy to read.
It's gonna be fine, yeah?
Din looked at him. Boba spoke with such conviction that Din couldn't help but believe him a little. Whatever was gonna happen, Din was gonna be all right. Boba wouldn't let the Allure kill him.
Part of me, Din said honestly, as Boba finally shed the last of his armor, wants to just pack it up and hit the black, go back to Tatooine tonight, say carket to all this and leave.
We can, if you want to, Boba said. He sounded sincere.
Just say the word, Jarka. Kreesh can't keep you here.
Din shook his head. It might be the smarter thing to do, he muttered. He looked out the viewport again.
But Rao believes in me. Strill. I don't know about anyone else, but they welcomed me. They shared their food, their tihar, their stories. There is a place for me here. There is. A place for Boba, too, he thought, thinking of Kip Awad and his solemn expression. If we want it. And I want it. I just...
Din wasn't sure that he wanted to kill for it, that was all. Well, that and I still don't know what Kreese wants, he thought. If she wants me to defend my claim, or if she wants somebody to put a knife in my ribs. Think about it, Bubba advised. He stretched again, groaning like an old massif, then tilted his head in the direction of Din's bunk. He raised an eyebrow. Din rolled his eyes. My son's in the room, he said, and you've already made me come twice today, Bubba. Bubba grinned. We can try for three some other time, he promised. No need to traumatize your kid, eh? Just come to bed, Din. To sleep. Think about what you want to do in the morning. Nobody's going to make you step out across that ice. If you want to leave, we can. Sleep sounded good. Sleep with Bubba beside him, warm, his heartbeat steady against Din's cheek, sounded even better. All right, Din said, relenting. Just to sleep. On my honor, Bubba said, solemn. Din eyed him. He meant that, Din thought. He sighed and straightened up, too. After you, then, he said. Bunk's the first door on the left. Try not to wake the kid up. You can dry your clothes off in the sonic if you've still got snow everywhere. Bubba made a pleased humming sound and left his armor where he'd piled it, padding off in the direction of the bunk room. Din cast one last look down at the orange and red lights below, then turned and followed Bubba to bed. Bubba was right. Din could worry about it in the morning.